I have never played Fortnite, but we're going to be playing a lot of it today, so buckle up. If I am going to get cracked, then I should probably download the game. Wait, what's an epic launcher? I just want to play Fortnite. Luckily, this endeavor won't break the bank because Fortnite is a free game. Really? I get to experience all of this for free? Today, we're going to be playing 100 games of Fortnite to see if we can actually improve, develop a skill, and try and earn that elusive victory royale. I mean, we're not playing Fortnite. I'm playing Fortnite. You're watching a YouTube video. Now, before we get into any games, let's first... Alright, I'm just going to go with my standard username, no big deal, and... Oh. Okay, yeah, that one's probably on me. The game's been out for 7 years, so I hope whoever has that account has been earning me a lot of dubs and make me look good. Okay, I guess we should keep a low profile. We don't want to get stream sniped, you know? So after hours of brainstorming, I settled on the name GatorGuy333, because I'm the Gator Guy. 333. There are two popular modes to play Fortnite. There's the classic Battle Royale mode with all the features and doodads that made the game as popular as it is, like doing this. And then there's Zero Build, where there's none of that shit. Now, which mode is the more competitive mode? Whichever mode I'm playing. For my very first game, I decided to play the classic Battle Royale mode, baby. We're playing Fortnite like how God intended. Builds on, ranked off, skin default. What, you think I'm going to buy a skin? You think I'm going to spend money on a free game? Get out of here. Oh my God, is that Peter Griffin? All right, enough talk. Let's start. I would like to remind you that I'm playing Fortnite for the very first time.
Who's shooting me? Oh God.
I didn't have a friend on call to tell me what buttons to press or give me emotional support. Like, no one told me, hey, don't drop that mythic gun for shield blasters. Shield blasters aren't even that good. Also, my go-to video games are Mario Maker and Tetris. I'm not really a first-person kind of shooter. What do you mean it's technically a third-person shooter? Who are the other two people? Instead of doing all of these unnecessary side quests, right now, my one and only quest is to be the best and not rest until I conquest all the sweats.
Do I take fall damage in this game?
Don't worry, Past James. You'll find out soon enough. I landed in fencing fields, and the second my feet touched the ground, I started getting shot at. I went inside a building and started breaking random objects, hoping that there was a gun inside them.
This is horrible sound.
And I grabbed a rare Striker AR. The very first gun of my Fortnite career and it's already a rare? Let's go, dude. But then I found an uncommon shotgun just lying on the floor, and I had to pick which gun I was going to take to battle because my inventory was already full of priceless items. I decided to keep my rare gun because it had more bullets and because I like the color blue more than green. So,
can I only hold one gun, or is it like my inventory is full? Who am I talking to? Oh! Ah! You stood no chance, bro. You stood no chance.
In that moment, I had gotten what I thought was my very first Fortnite kill. This, however, was not another player, but rather one of the many NPCs just wandering around the map. But I didn't know that at the time, so there was nothing but pure joy on my face. Almost immediately, I got a second Fortnite kill, and my suspicions that these were actually computer players were growing.
Is this a bot? Why can't I... They, like, didn't hurt me at all.
I started shooting what looked like a final boss, but I'd run out of bullets. Uh-oh. I ran away, narrowly dodging every shot being fired at me. I healed up, found another gun, tried shooting the boss again, ran out of bullets again, and then I ran away. Again. Hey, that's two confrontations where I didn't die. Clearly, I'm a natural. I knew I had to get away from the danger, so I started building a ramp.
And I... We're building a staircase. Ah, oh, God! No! No, that's how it happened! That's how I went out!
So, yes, there is fall damage in Fortnite. You know what? Build mode sucks. Build mode's what killed me. We're done doing that. We're doing no build from now on. Now, before we get into game two, I would like to briefly explain some of the fundamentals I learned from playing that I wish someone explained to me. Starting with the Guns are going to be your main tool for killing. And every gun has a rarity assigned to it, ranging from common, uncommon, rare, epic, mythic, and legendary. Those last two might be switched, actually. I never knew which adjective was better. But either way, orange and yellow guns are more rare than rare guns, and more epic than epic ones. I'm sorry if you already know this, okay? This is just how I process things. Okay, I have to make a YouTube video about it. An uncommon sniper rifle could have the best scope in the game, while an epic one could have no scope at all. The epic sniper will do more damage and have a faster reload time, but if you can't hit anyone due to a lack of scope, which gun's actually better? Doesn't matter for me, I still couldn't hit anyone regardless. Also, this is an Overwatch 2. You have a limited amount of ammo, which in the early game is something you really have to be mindful of. I learned that my first day.
I'm out.
You'll just have to play the game to figure out which guns click with you, but my favorite guns are shotguns. And I have the data to back it up. The damage they do, as well as you not even needing good aim to do damage, make them a great choice for getting kills. Fun! I'm having fun! Unfortunately, you can't just go walking around with every shotgun you find. You only have 5 inventory slots that you have to use wisely. And you'll want to save at least 2 of those slots for a healing item and a specialty item. So really, you should only be going around with a maximum of 3 guns. But I'm not here to backseat game, alright? You can do whatever you want. It's a free game. Okay, enough explaining. Let's get back to match. I landed in fencing fields and immediately started getting shot at again. Not a super great start, I know.
How did you get a weapon so fast?
I found a gun, but with 3 other people shooting me, I decided my best option was to hide in the dumpster. Which turned out to be a terrible hiding spot because the boss lady found me in 5 seconds. And for the next 4 minutes, I grabbed any gun or grenade I could find and started using them on all the grunts shooting me. And I was slowly starting to pick them off.
What's up? What's up, guys? How's it going? How many kills is this? 1?
I was gaming so hard that I didn't even realize that this right here was my first actual Fortnite kill. XXX Dark Tonics XX. I'm sorry I had to do it to you, but you were the first player I ever eliminated. I hope knowing this fact makes you feel a sense of pride and accomplishment in me. My KD ratio is now perfectly balanced, so that's good. I took a moment to figure out the controls, and I started taking down some more players.
Let me see if I can, zoom in. Okay, I can crouch. Nope, that's... Oh, okay. Is there, a... Oh, if I hold... Oh, that's how I do it. What are you? Rare, and you have 30... Oh, wait, my other gun had 105 bullets.
With the boss eliminated, I opened a vault with a key card and found 2 epic guns and a rocket launcher. Also, on the way to the vault, I may or may not have dropped a mythic gun for some shield blasters. Thankfully, no one saw, so that would have been embarrassing.
Where's Tilted Towers? Look! What is that?
A giant floating island appeared in the sky, and I decided to head up it.
See ya!
In the middle of the island, I started to capture a flag, and when I successfully captured it, I was rewarded with even more mythic guns that I didn't pick up for some reason. I'm sorry, rewatching this footage is just as painful for you as it is for me, okay?
Supersonic racing. Everybody was supersonic racing. Come on, load! Dude, I don't want to count any chickens or anything, but are we doing this?
I saw the storm closing in, and then I noticed...
Oh, there's only 2 people! It's me and one other guy!
And then this amazing clutch happened.
Okay, load. Where'd you go? Where is she? There she is. What do I do now?
Well, that just happened. My second game ever, and I already got a dub? Oh, you? Well, all of you astute, sweaty Fortnite players watching might have noticed that my final opponent kinda sucked ass. I mean, look at him. We're both in a completely open area, and this player can't even land a single hit on me. And they made it into the top 2? That's because... No matter how good you are at Fortnite, After every round, there's one winner and 99 losers. And if every player has an equal chance of winning, that would mean you're still losing 99% of the time. And if you were playing a video game where you lost 99% of the time, you would probably stop having fun and never play the game again. Or not, I don't know, I've never played Dark Souls. So what Epic Games does to remedy this is they fill up every match with bots who kind of suck shit. This way, you can get some easy kills on other players and make it further into every game. At least you got 3 kills in 20th place, right? That doesn't feel as bad as getting 99th. However, the unintended consequence of this is that now, after every kill you get, there's a little thought in the back of your head thinking, did I actually kill someone with a soul, or is Fortnite going easy on me? So there's a pretty big chance that my first Fortnite kill, XXX Dark Tonic XXX, wasn't even a real person that could feel proud of me. Chances are, none of these other players are real. Here are my opponents. Eventually, we'll be at a high enough level where it'll start to feel like, you know, a challenge. We're just gonna keep trucking along. Let's start map.
No, 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 no. Okay. Oh, I'm out. Cool. Hello.
Okay, I guess we'll chalk up those last two games to beginner's luck. Surely things will go differently in match.
A cabbage and a coconut. Cool. Let me just bite into that. And shotgun and shotgun and shotgun. Made me waste all my ammo, dude. Okay, anyone at all? Hello? Too easy! Too!
Technically speaking, no one has killed me yet. At least in match 2, I was the one who eliminated the last player, but matches 3 and 4 just handed me a crown on a fluffy pillow. You know, I wanted to do this really cool thing where we looked at spreadsheets and tracked my progress, but all the data's gonna get kinda messed up if I just keep winning all the time. Why learn the game or develop a strategy if everything I'm doing results in a win? It's upsetting that I'm already perfect. I hope this is still a good idea for a video. We still have a whole lot more Fortnite to get through, so let's just see if we can stumble and fumble our way into even more victory.
Ah! Ah! Oh, this is what loss feels like.
I think those 3 wins in a row made me a little cocky. I mean, no one has been able to stop me, so I wasn't trying anything special. When I saw another player, I would just do my normal strategy of standing still and shooting, and it got me 15th place. But this does prove that I can be stopped. Finally, we've faced a worthy opponent. Sheeny Shear. F*** you, Sheeny Shear. Oh well, I guess we couldn't win them all. I mean, I still have more wins than losses at this point. As long as the next 50 games go well, then I won't be complaining.
I was looking at the map, bro!
How do I thank the bus driver? I would love to thank them, but I unfortunately do not know the button to thank them.
I don't know what this is, but I'm afraid to use it. God! I don't know what that does! I don't know what that does! Whoa, 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 whoa! No. Oh, boy. Oh, no. I get down. Ooh! Ooh! The bus driver. The guy. Oh! What is this? Medallion. Cool. I want you. Hello, mate. Look at the camera, floof. Camera's right there, floof. What the? What just happened?
I was in the middle of a grind. How come when I shoot people, it takes like 4 or 5 hits? I'm starting to get in heated gamer moments.
Am I just bad at the game? Oh, I am bad at the game. Is this? How do I
get you here?
You got me.
Cool. B?
Oh, it's B. That was bad. This match I started doing pretty well in.
We can't keep doing this. We can't.
I landed in Pleasant Plaza and got 3 kills without taking any damage.
We got the jump on him.
I started getting even more kills and was picking up some pretty good loot. I even picked up these 3 medallions, not knowing what they did. And before I knew it, there was only me and one person left.
Only one person left?
This hadn't happened since those first 3 games, which I frankly didn't deserve to win.
Where are you?
I was upset, yes, but I can accept when I've been outplayed.
How did that happen?
In this match, I got my first and only kill with a cluster clinger right at the very start. Overall, I was able to get 9 kills this match. There were a lot of close calls in this game, but I was always able to find health packs and heal back up. As long as I stayed in the storm circle, I was going to let the other players come to me. And my patience paid off, because once again, I ended up in the top 2, and I started to get nervous.
Oh, fiddlesticks.
No. I made some dumb mistakes. Like, once again, not picking up those legendary guns that were on the ground. What? I only got 3 kills this match, but I made it to the top 3 with a legendary run-and-pump shotgun. If you've played Fortnite, you know this is the most superior shotgun out of all the shotguns. I saw the last 2 players fighting by the storm, and instead of waiting for them to kill each other, I sniped Banana Joe 934 from afar. I was in second place yet again, but this time I had the last player in my sights.
Where are you? I know about that running over people trick.
No! Ooh. I want to talk about the top 2 jitters. Dude, I can't describe how anxiety-inducing it is being one of the last 2 players alive. You have narrowly survived every challenge and bot thrown at you for the last 20 minutes, and now the only thing that stands between you and a victory royale is the best player in the game. Getting into the top 2, I would literally be shaking and making mistakes that I couldn't afford to make. With so many close games, I decided to call it a night, and as my head rested on my pillow, I only had one question on my mind. How? By this point, Fortnite had started to slip into my subconscious. I was having dreams about Fortnite. One time I was lying in bed and I heard this sound. And I thought, there's someone nearby. I need to kill them. I pretty much got the gist of Fortnite. I had been to all the places on the map, I knew what every gun did, but I couldn't get over the second place hump. I needed to elevate my Fortnite skills. I needed to consult the Is anyone going to interrupt me? No? Look, not getting outside help was never part of the challenge, okay? Is it fair that everyone else already knows the buttons when I didn't even know what button used the scope? How am I supposed to know that? No one ever told me you can pick up the business turret after it's been thrown. And I'll never be able to pick them up. Here is the official guide to Fortnite. It's full of useful information like telling me where Tilted Towers or Loot Lake is. Oh, here's something. Surviving the end game. It says you need to prepare to improvise. To survive this phase of the game, you'll want to have a few structures you can build. Okay, maybe this won't be helpful. Ah, here we go. You can claim a victory royale without building a single structure in the game, but you'll need sharp reflexes and to be able to move deftly to pull it off. Okay, so skill issue is what the official guidebook says. I was kind of hoping for some, I don't know, useful strategies. Something like
Here's the link to an aimbot. So I decided to ask a real human for some help, and my friend Rush told me, hey, did you know there's a setting you can turn on that lets you visually see what direction noises are coming from? What? So now, even if my ears can't actually hear footsteps, the game will tell me, hey, there's footsteps to your right. Someone is definitely nearby. Now, this setting is for hearing impaired people, so is me using this setting as an able-bodied hearing man cheating, kind of? Yeah, kind of. But I need every bit of help I can get. And I bet most of you play with this setting on, too, and you hear just fine. Now, let's see if we can apply this useful tool as we head into Oh, I have some bad news. I don't normally work with external hard drives, so I didn't realize these things were made out of eggshells. I was storing all my footage on an external hard drive, and I guess I forgot to put it on its tiny pillow or something, because after I stored over 300 gigs worth of footage onto it, it stopped working. I took it to a data recovery specialist, and they quoted me $950 to repair it. Oh boy, I mean, I gotta go for it. The stuff on this hard drive's priceless. But then they were like, actually, there's nothing we can do, idiot, loser. You see these pictures we sent you? That means it's too damaged beyond repair. What were you doing to this hard drive? Were you throwing it on the ground? Were you hitting it with a hammer? So, unfortunately, we will never get to see games 63 through 99. Hey, are you crying?
No. Who are you?
I am your fairy Fortnite godmother. I'm here to help you.
Are you going to use magic to fix my hard drive?
What? Do you think I have magical powers?
I don't... Yes?
Magic can't change the fact that you saved all of your important, irreplaceable footage onto a single hard drive, stupid. But luckily, my child, you don't need any magic. You have Fortnite Reaper. Did you know that Fortnite automatically saves your last 50 or so matches as a replay file that you can go back and watch later? This is a miracle! Because of replay files, we didn't lose any gameplay footage. We did, however, lose the webcam, so you won't get to see my live reaction or witty commentary during any of these games, which sucks, I know. I did this whole bit where I kept losing, so I became a sweat.
We're cracked! We're going!
But I'm just happy we're able to recover any gameplay footage at all, and I've also learned to back everything up. So with that little hiccup taken care of, how did I do with visual sounds turned on? Well, let's take a look at match.
And boom. He's gone. Ooh. Take that medallion, and there's a bunch of legendary guns, and I actually grab two of them. Two legendary guns. Circle real small. And then... Victory Royale. Very anticlimactic fight. But actually, now that we have a replay, so you, and me. So they have, like, very low health. You have this health. Yeah, gotta get out of the storm, bro. Get out of the storm. Couldn't make it out. Gator Guy's the winner.
You might say that a win is a win, but I kind of wanted a win where I pulled the trigger to get. So I did pretty well in match 63, but match 64, I got 81st place. So, am I actually getting any better?
There goes my crown.
In match 65 and 66, I got second place back to back.
Here I am looking for the last guy. Here's the last guy sitting on the roof. Here's his business turret looking. Both are right here on top of each other. Don't see each other. We're running. I still don't see him. Ooh, turret gets a lot of damage on me. I run for cover in there. Turret still shoots me through the wall. And then this guy just waits for me to come out of the building. Yep. And then finishes me off.
Nothing really special happened for the next few games, besides getting 99th place on match 73 and getting 79th place on match 79th, which was the only time that the place number matched the match number, so that's pretty cool, I think. But then big things happened in match 8. It had taken me so long to complete 100 games that Fortnite changed seasons. There was a new ancient Greek-themed update that's totally old news by the time I get this video done. Parts of the map changed, my favorite business turret was removed, and my level was reset to level 1. This was my first time playing in the new season. I was unfamiliar with all the new locations and items, but I managed to get 5 kills and make it to the top 2. Me and the last player were shooting each other on our own hills, and then I decided it was time for some finishing moves. Is the storm getting close? Because I think I hear some thunder.
Oh, look at that. Almost missed. Exploded the tree right behind him. They're like, oh, we're doing a lightning fight? We can do a lightning fight. Bam, all in. Oh, they didn't want to overdo it. Oh, that's nice.
Then, in my very next match, I got 6 kills and was once again in the top 2.
Oh, I hope it didn't glitch out right there.
I had done it. My very first Fortnite win.
We both, have not loaded our guns. She misses. I hit her. She misses again. Really? Look, we're both reloading at the same time. As soon as I'm done, boom! Final kill.
It didn't really feel like a clutched game, you know? There weren't really any pro gamer moves. We were both running around fumbling to see who could load their gun first. But we're not getting points for style, okay? This is a win that I finally earned. Of course, you'll never get to see how I reacted in this moment. The best I can do is an artistic recreation. I kept grinding the 100 games to see if I could earn any more victories, and for a while, I couldn't even get back to the top 2. I knew I was running out of chances to clutch out more wins until I played Match 90. Now, this footage is a little corrupted. I landed in Rebel's Roost and started exploring a house that isn't loading in the replay footage, and I found a legendary gun inside of a regular old chest. I know it sounds unbelievable, you just had to be there. Then I talked to an NPC that I'd never seen before, Mina. I gave her a job to be my buddy, and she did something I didn't know an NPC could do. Every 30 seconds, Mina would scan the nearby area, revealing anything important. Chests, ammo boxes, even other players would become illuminated. This was amazing. I had a legendary gun, and now with Mina's scanner, no one could sneak up on me. I understand why people play with hacks now. This power is amazing. I think I'm in love. I got to the top 2, but once again, I couldn't keep my composure and choked right at the very end.
And then I'm healing up behind a rock, and then I didn't even see him over there. In a 1v1, I was unable to clutch it out.
That's now 8 times I've made it to second place, with only one of those times I was able to kill the last player. After getting 45th place in Match 99, I decided it was time to revamp my strategy. For my 100th game, I was going to do something no other Fortnite player could do. I was going to study every game I ever played to see if I could find any patterns to help me win. What's a Fortnite coach? We can look back and learn from our mistakes. We can study the Oh yes, baby, it's spreadsheet time. My favorite time besides snack time. I don't know about you, but I had just as much fun filling out the spreadsheet as I did playing Fortnite. This time, I didn't lose the footage. Now let's see if we can find anything useful in all these numbers. Taking a look at all the places we got, you can clearly see it's a little all over the place. When I started this quest, I was expecting to see a graph more like this, where I would start off bad and then over time get better and better, getting closer to the number 1 rank. But in Fortnite, skill level does not necessarily translate to a better placement. Sometimes you and another player land in the exact same spot, and the first gun you grab is a sniper rifle, and all you see is the magnified barrel of a shotgun, and other times you can make it to the top 25 without ever seeing another soul. I did notice that in my first 31 games, I was getting a pretty low placement, but then once I started to get the hang of the game, I would more consistently make it into the top 10. I mean, sometimes I would still die quickly, but it was less frequent. Now let's see if we can find a pattern in the data that would translate into getting a better place. Maybe the secret to getting in the top 10 is getting a lot of kills. If we compare the amount of kills I got each match with the placement, we see... okay, I'm seeing a little bit of correlation here. The more kills we have, the better we tend to do. But sometimes I got 2 kills and made it to 79th place, and other times I got 1 kill and made it to the top 11. Technically speaking, you don't even need to get a single kill to get a victory royale if the other players are shit enough. But I think you'll be surprised to see what happens when we compare the placement with the length of every match. Now that's some correlation. The matches that were longer, we did better in. I think I'll apply this strategy to my 100th game. In order to not die, you have to stay alive. I'm a genius. Now let's shift gears and talk about every player who ever killed me. Boo! Here are all of their IP addresses, and here are their mother's houses, and most importantly, here is everyone's recorded playtime. Now we can determine who among my killers don't shower, and that'll make me feel better to losing to them. If we add up all of my killers' playtimes, we get an average playtime of 301 hours and 37 minutes. Now, gamers, if you've played a video game for over 300 hours, are you considered a sweat? I honestly don't know where we should draw the line, but let's just say for the sake of this video, if you're above a 301 average, you're a sweat. However, since it took forever to make this video, and Fortnite changed seasons yet again, we can check back in on these gamers in 3 months to see if the players we deemed as sweats do indeed play more Fortnite than everyone else. Some people played a little, some people played a lot, and someone even quit the game entirely after killing me. Now, I don't want to sound mean, but these gamers played an average of 50 hours and 6 minutes of Fortnite. I said mean, which is like, what, 33 minutes a day for 3.9 hours a week? That just sounds like a nice Saturday. Now, what can we do with all this information? Nothing. This is just a reminder to set your account to private because people on the internet are weird. Now, that's all well and good, but which gun is the most deadly to us? Here's a list of everything I ever died to in the game. Looking at the data, we actually have a tie for most deadly gun, with shotguns and ARs both getting 30 kills on me, and the most deadly rarity being a pretty close tie with rare guns getting 24 kills and epic guns getting 25 kills. So we want to be extra cautious if our opponent has a rare or epic shotgun or AR. Someone write that down. I really wanted to see if there was something in the data that would definitively prove that I was improving at the game. I wasn't happy with just looking at the placements because they were all over the place, but I think I found something that does indeed prove I am getting better. My accuracy. Plugging in all the data, we get this scatter plot, which looks exactly like a target I would shoot during practice. But if we look at the scatter plot trend, my average accuracy at game 1 was around 22%, and by game 99, we're getting an accuracy of 31%, boys! That's 9% more accurate! That's improvement in my book! This abundant arithmetic is all well and good, but there's something we're missing. Which gun that I was shooting gets the most kills? Oh, you'll have to excuse me. I gotta get going. I'm hosting the... How are you guns all doing tonight? Before I give out these awards, I would like to give an honorary Best Assist trophy to the Business Turret. On record, the Business Turret was able to assist with 15 different kills. Unfortunately, Business Turret is unable to be here, so Porta Bunker will be accepting this award on their behalf. Alright. In third place, with 24 kills, we have Rare Shotguns. Thank you, Rare Shotguns. You're always there for me. In second place, with 27 kills, we have the Uncommon AR. Nice job, buddy. Keep up the good work. And the winner of the 2024 Fortnite Gun Awards are, with 33 kills, my eyes see the Uncommon Shotgun. So, going into game 100, we need to make sure we're equipped with a shotgun that's uncommon. Actually, this whole thing's stupid. Just because I got the most kills with the uncommon shotgun doesn't mean it's the best gun. It means it's the most common. I mean uncommon. I'm sorry for wasting everyone's time. Let's just get back into the... By this point, I knew that I lost the footage for games 63 through 99. This was my last chance to get a victory royale on camera. It's do or die. For this legendary match, my girlfriend did something really sweet and gifted me a skin of a guy in an alligator costume, meaning I could finally be the real Gator Guy 333 and still not spend any money on a free game. Thanks, babe. During the first 99 matches, I would sometimes add silly little commentary even though no one was ever going to watch the footage.
Honey, did you leave the chest on the kitchen counter again?
But for this momentous match, I was going to remain completely silent. I needed all of my focus to be on the game. I landed in Zeus's Pantheon and immediately got 3 kills. A very close call. One more bullet would have done the trick. The most important match of my life almost ended with me in 84th place. So, admittedly, combing through the 21 hours of footage to fill out my spreadsheets took quite some time. So much time that they changed the game once again. They added a new item called the Legendary Banana. What does that do? Is it a weapon? Food items normally heal you, so why is it legendary? I decided to take the banana with me and figure out what it did later. After not seeing any chatter, I headed out of the Pantheon to a bunker opening nearby. I waited a bit to see if the coast was clear, then I made my way down and looted up. Heading outside, I saw an NPC. Ooh, I think someone's about to get a job. I couldn't find the source of the bullets, so I hopped into a sports car and drove away. But when I got out... I guess now's a good time to learn what this legendary banana does. It was over. My 100th match, and all I got was 16th place. And that's when I learned... You can read a description of what an item does in the tab menu. 100 games in, and I'm still learning new things. But it was too little, too late. My 100th game was a complete failure. Or was it? You see, I had set out to play Fortnite 100 times. And after this match, I had only played no build 99 times. Remember, my very first game was with builds on. Are we really going to count that one? For one, it totally messes with the spreadsheet that I have 99 no-build games and 1 build game. So, this next one, this is my actual 100th game. For the spreadsheet. I landed an old reliable Rebel's Roost to pay a visit to my favorite NPC, Mina. With her on my team, we were unstoppable. Inside, I randomly found a Midas service station that let me upgrade my rare shotgun into a legendary one. I didn't know you could upgrade guns. 100 games in, and we're still learning new things. We made it to the top 6 with 4 kills. Mina used an ingenious strategy of trying to shoot them through the ground. I like the spirit, Mina, but I don't think it's gonna work. We faced off, and I blasted them with my legendary shotgun. 5 people left. I healed up and waited for someone to appear on Mina's scanner. Finally, we spotted someone. 2 someones. A 2v2, huh? I tried to move to a better position, but a player started to flank me. Both of us started blasting, but I came out victorious with only 8 health points to spare. 3 people left. I healed up as fast as I could, and then spotted another player. I used the new River Styx skulls to jump forward, trying to shorten the distance between us. I got 1 shotgun hit on them, but they immediately threw down a Shield Bubble Jr. No one can fire bullets in or out of a Shield Bubble Jr., so I knew the only way I was going to get this other player would be from the inside.
Dude, I am
And those shaky nerves were probably the reason I died to an NPC. She was the goddess of hunting, sure, but still an NPC nonetheless. My NPC was shooting the ground. Where were you, Mina? So, I know you were all hoping to see a Victory Royale on camera, but I was never able to successfully win one. Or could I? Remember my second match that was against a bunch of bots? Are we really going to count that one? I mean, I wasn't even playing against real people, okay? I think we should strike that one from the record, too. From now on, only matches with real people count. In preparation for my actual 100th match, I tried some meditation to calm my nerves down. Okay, that time, I wasn't doing my meditation right. Okay, this... No! That one was bullshit. They got a super awesome gun right at the very start. We're not counting that one, okay? This... Wait, other players can see minus scans? People know when they're getting scanned? You know, something strange happened in Match 100, Part 5. Early on in the game, as everyone was scrambling to get good loot, I visually heard some footsteps outside, and I jumped out a window and saw a low-life default skin running helplessly into a wall, holding nothing but a pickaxe. My ranger pistol was drawn, pointed right at the back of their head, but for some reason, I didn't pull the trigger. I knew that if I were to achieve a victory royale, that eventually this default skin would have to be eliminated, but I took pity on them. We're all trapped in this endless cycle of violence. To what end? To be the last one standing in a giant death battle, only to die in a merciless storm? Also, they didn't want to spend money on a free game. You know, I get that. So, I did the only thing a Fortnite player could do to communicate intentions of peace. I danced for them. They slowly turned, still wielding a pickaxe that could have very easily swung at me during my dance solo. And then they did the unthinkable. They danced back to a copyrighted song that I can't play. And then the other player got out a piece of paper and drew a heart. While we stood there getting notifications that somewhere on the map, PAX Player 25, Shotgun, Solo Spy 86, and Ginger Ninja 2906 eliminated Gaelic Gator 12... Oh no, a fellow gator. Me and this other player were sharing a moment. A moment of friendship. Of course, this is still a battlefield, and just like the World War I soldiers on December 26th, I had to get back to shooting my friend. I gave this default skin somewhat of a fighting chance by giving them a handgun and letting them take the first shot. And they weirdly had dog shit aim. Like, non-human levels of bad, so I might have just shared this intimate moment with a bot. So even though we couldn't see a Victory Royale on camera, maybe we could do something better. Is it possible I had been playing Fortnite all wrong? I mean, not including those first 30 games where I was definitely playing wrong, but maybe the real Fortnites were the friends we made along the way. I'm done with trying to win. My new quest is to make at least one Fortnite friend. And to do this, I need ways of communicating to other players my peaceful, non-threatening intentions. I need to buy more emotes. I need to spend money on a free game. Babe! Can I use your credit card? The only emotes available in the shop were these three dances. They're not really the friendliest dances, but they were the only ones available. So, let's see if we can take these new learned dance moves and see how far we can get with the power of friendship. While all the players were waiting for the battle bus, I wanted to do something I was never able to do before. Dance with another player. So many times, other players would come up to me and do a cool dance, and all I could do back was the lame default dance. So I went up to this girl in a yellow jumpsuit and started to dance. We showed each other that we both had zero crowns. Oh wait, she's got one. And I think my dancing impressed her because she went from swinging on a cloud to playing the guitar. So, as first dances go, it was pretty successful. When the match started, I headed to old reliable Rebel's Roost. And the first thing I did was stock up in the gun room. Okay, I know I'm trying to make friends this round, but sometimes people don't want to be friends. I made a rule for myself that if I saw another player, I would dance at them, but then if they started shooting me, then friendship quest is over, we're switching to they don't deserve my kindness quest. Okay, I think that's fair, That's a healthy boundary. I headed outside and saw my first potential friend. I tried showing them my new dance moves, but they weren't too impressed. They started shooting me with the aim that only a bot should have, and I had no choice but to end their program. The next potential friend I tried to make tried to shoot me while I was dancing, and maybe I was unintentionally matrix dodging all their bullets, but they couldn't seem to hit me either. I decided to recruit Mina again, thinking that her scanner would be useful to help find other potential friends, not realizing that she wasn't on a friendship quest right now, so she would be trying to shoot our potential friends. So if you're trying to do a friendship quest, then don't hire NPCs. I danced on top of portable bunkers out in the open, but there weren't any people to enjoy my dance moves. And before I knew it, me and Mina were in the top three, and I started to get excited. Maybe a little too trigger-happy.
This is just my heart rate, dude.
I saw one of my last two opponents, potential friends. I threw down a bunker and started to throw down on top of it. And as they were backing up, they started to point their sniper scope at me. Now, maybe they were looking at me through their scope thinking, whoa, is this guy with the cool skin actually dancing in the middle of a fight? That's awesome, I'm going to be his friend. But I didn't give them that benefit of the doubt. They hadn't technically shot me first, so I was breaking my only rule, but I didn't want to give them a free sniper headshot on me, dude. So in self-defense, I threw some lightning at them and finished them off with an epic DMR. An assist? That would mean I never showed this last player my friendly dance moves, but they took a shot at me, so this is fair game. I'll admit, I kinda lost sight of the friendship quest. I was no longer trying to befriend this player because I felt so close to achieving a victory royale. She came down from a tower, and I finally got a good view of who this last player was. And I was filled with so much bloodlust and darkness that I didn't even recognize her. It was the same girl I met in the lobby. The first player I had ever danced with. The girl in the yellow jumpsuit. I don't know the names of skins. I may not have recognized her, but I think she recognized me. She got on top of a hill and threw down all of her weapons and started to do the same swinging cloud emote she did in the lobby. I still hadn't realized what she was doing, and I took a shot at her. Luckily, I missed. That's that 31% accuracy right there. Only then did I realize what I was doing.
Wait.
And I was disgusted. I had set out to make a Fortnite friend, and now when someone extends an olive branch to me, I shoot them? I quickly danced back at her from afar. Mina took a shot at her, but I told her to wait back and threw a portable bunker over her. I didn't want to count my chickens or anything, but I think this is my very first Fortnite friend. I made my way around the hill, ignoring the dropped victory crown. This match was never about winning some crown. My new Fortnite friend jumped down the hill, and I crouched down to show how small and non-threatening I was. For a brief moment, we were the last two survivors in a giant battle royale, and neither of us wanted to hurt the other. I didn't realize what my new Fortnite friend was doing. She was purposely heading into the storm, forcing me to win. Goodbye, Fortnite friend. I'll always remember you. Oh, wait, she's coming back. Did she change her mind?
Hey.
No! My friend! Maybe if someone hadn't hit her with a bolt of lightning, she would have survived the storm. But either way, she sacrificed herself, and I got what I always wanted. A victory royale caught on camera.
Jimmy?
Not like this! Not like this!
That's
Are you kidding me? No. Pretty poetic that the only time I try to make friends was the time I won. Not a lot of games have a fun free-to-play version, but Fortnite is totally that game. It's constantly getting new updates and is an absolute blast to play with friends. Parents can play it with their kids, millennials can play it with Gen Z, and everyone can have a grand old time chasing after that crown. But for me, I'm going to keep on making Fortnite friends. And lastly, if you or someone you know is good at fixing hard drives, I will gladly send you this hard drive, and if you can get the files from it, I will give you $950. Please don't look around on that flash drive, especially don't look in the folder called taxes, because that's where my important tax information is, so just fix it and just let me know, okay? Thank you all for watching this video about me playing Fortnite a lot. Now that it's all done, I'm going to go play some more Fortnite. Are you enjoying the new season of Fortnite? Let me know in the comment box down below. That question will be relevant till the end of time, I think, so that's good. Thank you to my amazing team for getting this incredibly short video out in a timely manner. If you enjoyed a video game challenge video, let me know. Maybe next time I'll do 100 ranked matches of Fortnite. Anyways, don't really have any announcements. Be sure to wear your seatbelts. See you later.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Odd Ones Out. My name's The Odd Ones Out, and today we're...
Welcome to Australia, Jane.
That's true. I'm here in Down Underland, Australia.
A.K.A. Jazz's hotel room.
I'm doing this kind of drawing collab because I'm busy doing VidCon Australia stuff, so that's why Jazza was so nice to let me film this video and use his camera equipment, so thank you, Jazza.
It's okay.
Mate.
To help make you feel more at home in Australia and to culturally educate you, I've put the most confusing slang terms and descriptors together in the form of three different characters that I'm going to say, and you're going to draw in your style or whatever you want, and I'm going to draw the actual representation of.
Yes.
And we're going to see yours and see how it compares. And at the end of it, if you've done a pretty good job, I have some Australian tricks that you can try as well. This isn't authentically Australian because we're trying to keep it family friendly.
Oh.
If it was authentically Australian, this video would be full of beer and let's just say some pretty harsh... swear word terms are colloquial, friendly terms in Australia.
I thought it was weird because I was watching TV in the hotel and they were just like saying the F word and it's like, you're allowed to say that?
Alright, so let's get started. Character number one, a yobbo with a bottle of grog and a stubby holder sitting on a dummy.
It's like four vocabulary words.
Character number one. Let's get started.
What do you think America is like? What's weird about America?
I feel like Australia is pretty easy to cliche. With America, you have like Californians and, you know,
Arizonans, those people.
You know, the cliche Arizonans that everyone talks about. What are the things that sort of have struck you as interesting or cool or weird since you've been here?
The toilets. You call them toilets.
Like, if I'm in America and I need to tinkle, I'll think, I've got to go to the toilet.
You got to go to the bathroom.
But there's not a bath in the... There's a toilet in there.
There's also a sink. Do you want to call it the toilet and sink room? Wait. Are one of these a toilet? Is one of these words a toilet?
Maybe. I'll never tell. I feel like we should wrap up pretty soon. How are you feeling?
Here's the problem, is that... I didn't know what I drew, and so you'd be like, what is that? And I'll be like, it's a yabo. And you're like, what is a yabo? And it's like, it's the thing I drew.
All right, you ready? All right, you walk me through yours.
So I didn't know what a yabo was, so I just drew this this creature with a overbite and horns. He's sitting on a dunny, which is supposed to be like a dunny. I mean, the closest thing I could think of was a dummy. And then a grog. It just sounds like something alcoholic or with beer.
You got grog.
I got grog?
That's good. Grog is an alcoholic beverage.
I knew it.
Yeah.
One for four, I think.
The rest you just heard, yeah. A yobbo is kind of like just an unkempt, unappealing, typical... I guess it's sort of like a mix between like a delinquent and a... A bottle of grog, we've got a bottle of alcohol in a stubby holder, just like that foam. I don't know if you have them in America. They're like foam cup holders. There's like an encasing you put cold beer into.
So it's an unkempt person, but he has a cup holder.
Yes. And that's so his hands don't get too chilly. And sitting on a dummy is a toilet.
So if I went up to someone and I said, hey, where are the dunnies? They'll be like, oh, over there.
Yeah, definitely.
Where are the... dummies.
Next one. You're going to be drawing a bogan Sheila with moccasins and a flanny.
What's your favorite medium to draw?
Medium.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not including the computer, of course.
I'd actually say VR. Oh, not including the computer.
That's what I just said.
I'd go old school. I'd just get pencil and paper. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of pencil and paper, I went to an art museum, the Sydney something contemporary arts or whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it. Who decides what goes in a modern art museum? Like, the modern art is supposed to make you feel something. And the only thing that's making me feel was angry. So the thing about the toilets is that there's two flushers.
Yep.
What's that about?
Okay, so you have a half flush and a full flush. If you're doing a, let's say, a heavy-duty toilet session, you would use a full flush, which is what you're used to. But let's say you just have a little something.
You'd use a urinal for that.
Insignificant tinkle. Are you going to install a urinal in your house?
I wish.
No.
I mean, it makes sense, but it's different. Don't you guys actually not put shrimp on the Barbie? Isn't that a very scary
one? Prawns, yeah.
No, prawns.
The reference he's referring to is from a very old tourism ad. Yeah. Chuck another shrimp on the Barbie, and it just angered Aussies.
And there's plenty of shrimps on the Barbie.
What about people who throw boomerangs? There's a lot less of boomerang throwers than I was expecting.
Wait.
Can we try in the carpet? Now throw it back, and with movie magic, it'll look like it came back.
Or I'll have, like, blood running down my face.
It came back! I'm pretty much done.
Pretty much done, so am I.
Okay, so, Bogan Sheila.
Yeah.
There's a character in Lord of the...
Sheila.
Yes.
What's a Bogan, though?
I didn't know. I thought it was an Australian thing. Maybe it means friendly. And also, like, Australia has a lot of spiders in it.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, that's just they named it after Lord of the Rings. Wearing moccasins, which are these shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Aren't there, mm-hmm. Am I thinking of the right thing?
Are you thinking of, like, the clip-cloppy ones? Or?
Yeah, I'm thinking of the clip-cloppy ones.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, wait, the flannel, right? He's wearing, like, a flannel shirt. And then the bag of Mackers.
Yep.
That's just a funny way of saying markers. With an Australian accent.
Really?
Yeah. Get the bag of moccasins. I think I got that one on the nose.
Ooh, no. You did not. Bogan is kind of like a yobbo. We just have lots of names for delinquents.
So is that a man or a woman?
This is a Sheila.
Okay.
Sheila is a lady. Fortunately, you're pretty on the mark with a flanny.
Okay.
Flannelette shirt. Moccasins are sheep. Skin-made slippers.
Do you have moccasins?
I do not.
Oh. You're not a...
I'm not a bloody yobbo. And a bag of Maccas is a bag of McDonald's food. Maccas. So you can go to Maccas, and you can walk in and say, where's your dunny?
Where's your dunny, you Maccas? What's my total score? Like 2 out of 8?
Something like that. It's all right. It's not bad. Most people would get money.
I mean, that is a failing grade, but...
No, I feel like that's... Yeah, that was sort of yeah. A real ochre-looking bloke.
Is this just another delinquent person?
Try and say it with my accent.
Ochre?
Ochre.
Ochre.
Say, ochre-looking bloke.
Ochre-looking bloke. Bringing it back to Lord of the Rings, it sounds like orc. Like, goblins.
Wait, just stop drawing Lord of the Rings.
I didn't even
We're drawing actual people, mostly delinquent people. I like how you spelled bloke. B-L-O-A-K.
To be fair, even American words are bad at spellings.
Wearing togs at a Barbie.
There's a TV show called Man vs. Wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bear Grylls.
Bear Grylls.
Yeah, bloody ripper.
What was... I didn't understand that. I'm from Arizona. I'm like, oh yeah, it's going to be hot in the winter. You can wear a t-shirt in the winter. And so I only packed t-shirts. And I get here and I'm like, it's brisk.
When my wife had our baby... And the doctor was like, you know, talking to her about what she does, and she's like, I'm a teacher. And they were having a conversation, and then he turned to me and was like, what do you do? And
I make
like,
videos.
I'm a YouTuber. Yeah. He literally didn't reply. He was like, anyway, the baby is not there.
So last time we were in a video together, you offended a Somalian.
No, I'm just offending Australian.
I did another drawing collab where I killed off a bunch of orphans.
Oh, fun.
So I was imagining a macho guy who likes to go on adventures and pets crocodiles and gets killed by stingrays. And then at a Barbie, I know this one, hey, that's a barbecue. And he has shrimp on his plate because that's what you get, or prawns. He has prawns on his plate because that's what you guys like to barbecue.
Not really.
No?
That's the other reason people were offended by that ad, because we never really barbecue prawns. Okra is like super... cliche Aussie, like super... Ocker is sort of delinquent. When I say Steve Irwin sounds Ocker, like if you think of someone as Ocker,
uh-huh.
Usually it's the way they talk. But when I say an Ocker looking blade, it's inferring that they look like,
hey, gal, mate, welcome to Australia. This is
a stereotype, like an over-exaggerated stereotype.
Exactly. I guess it's hard to draw someone as particularly Ocker if they're wearing nothing but their togs.
Ah, togs.
Togs are a bathing suit.
Oh, bathing suit. Is it like a Speedo?
Well, it can be. It can be bathing shorts. Our colloquial term for Speedos. Yeah, this is so educational. Budgie smuggler. I know you're
cute. Wait, so it smuggles your budgies?
Budgie. It's a budgie is a bird. So it's like a bird. I'm not going to go into detail. Let's just leave that where it is. I think you did pretty well. Let's wrap it up with a nice little reward.
A reward?
Some Aussie food to whet your cultural appetite.
Are these Tim Tams?
Oh, yeah, Tim Tams.
I had these before. Yes.
They're so good. I don't know. You are not going to eat all of those. I just thought I'd... Do you have Twisties in America?
No, I don't think we have anything in America.
All right.
They're Cheetos.
No, they don't taste like Cheetos.
I mean, they're
a little harsher and a bit more rough around the edges.
Mm.
They're like Cheetos for bogeys.
I think Cheetos are more compressed. This peanut feels more airy to it.
Really?
You might be talking about puff balls. Those are really airy.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about plain old Cheetos.
These are Lamingtons.
Is that coconut on there?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Do you like coconut?
All right. I'll eat pastries and dessert.
You're not just eating food. It has to be content.
Okay, yeah.
So the review of the Tim Tams.
Those are really good. I wish they had them in America.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot like Tim Tom, who I know is a person.
All right. So, Lemington, what do you reckon?
It kind of tastes like bread. This is bread. With a little bit of chocolate and flaky coconut. But it tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit like an Almond Joy, but that's only because of the coconut.
This is an Anzac Bicky. A Bicky, sorry, is a biscuit.
It tastes like a cookie. Like an oatmeal raisin cookie without the raisins.
Yeah. So have you ever had Vegemite?
What?
Oh. Well, then what's the point of this?
Should I say no, I didn't? Ask that again. Ask that again.
No, it's too late. I bought a loaf of bread.
I forgot what it tastes like. I need to taste it again.
Don't patronize me. Okay, maybe I'll use this as an opportunity to teach people who haven't had Vegemite.
That's true.
It looks sort of like Nutella, I guess, to some people. They think it's like chocolatey or something.
No.
It's very strong. It's made of yeast extract. It's very salty. But if you put on a bunch of butter on your bread and you just very lightly...
Go all out, man.
This is neither of our content.
Wait,
but it's Australia.
Wait, this is
welcome to Australia.
This is butter and whatever that is.
Yeah, sometimes you put a slice of cheese on it. Same as last time.
Yeah, actually, Vegemite is really strong. I mean, definitely does not taste like Nutella. It's not the worst thing in the world. No, it is pretty bad, but
it's an acquired taste.
I definitely don't enjoy eating this. It almost tastes like you burnt it. Even though I know you didn't, because I saw you make it.
I mean, just looking at this table, it's like I've thrown Australian culture at you sort of abysmally.
I need to drown out the bad taste of VidCon. This video is going to come out after VidCon.
Yeah,
so... That was so fun, you guys. I'm glad I met all of you. Be sure to check out Jazz's video on his channel.
And we're going to do something that I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'm going to be basically testing him on American culture and trivia. I didn't bring him any food, though. I wish I did. So with that, thanks for watching, and wear your seatbelt.
Hey, are you going to make a video about this?
Probably not. Are you?
Only if something interesting happens. I want to tell you all the story about what happened at MrBeast's 100K YouTuber Battle Royale. This is going to be quite a long video, so some of the drawings are going to be done by other people, and I'm going to be recording this on different microphones, so sorry if I sound different. I'm not that sorry, I don't care. And I want to tell this story in its entirety. I don't want to cut anything out or split it into two videos, because the story I'm talking about is already up on MrBeast's channel, so what's the point of making people wait for a conclusion when you can just go and see what happened? If you've already seen MrBeast's video, which a lot of you probably have, then this story has already been spoiled for you, and you know how it's going to turn out. But you should still stick around, because I'm going to go into detail about the events that led up to the big fight, and sprinkle in just a healthy amount of embellishment. And if you live under a rock and don't know what I'm talking about or who this Mr. Beast character is, then pull up a chair and let me explain studios, because this is going to be quite the video. This is Mr. Beast, a 20-year-old YouTuber that after a couple of years of making cringy Minecraft intro compilations and how much money does X YouTuber make, he started uploading some unique challenge videos, but they weren't your normal challenge videos you see on YouTube, like the Cinnamon Challenge or the In My Feelings Challenge. He challenged his endurance by making videos like reading the dictionary in one sitting, or counting to 200,000, road to a million. Then he started one-upping his challenges by making some big and questionable financial decisions, like buying 100 T-Rex costumes, or literally giving out tens of thousands of dollars to people. His videos got insanely popular, which meant he earned more money, which meant he could spend even bigger quantities of money on videos, and in turn get more views because of how crazy they were, and then he got more money, and the cycle just continued, making him one of the fastest growing channels on YouTube. In 2015, he celebrated his 7K subscriber milestone, and in 2019, he's got over 16 million subscribers. The dude's been blowing up. And about a year ago, I sent him a Twitter DM saying, "Where do you buy so many things in bulk?" Like, random example, sprinkles. Because I just wanted to know who his supplier was, because Walmart banned me. We ended up chatting on Discord for a bit, and he told me that the reason he makes videos is to entertain people. And with the amount of money he's giving away, and the fact that he's probably losing money on some of these videos, it's obvious that he's not making these videos for the money. And I respect that. Also in the call, he told me he was playing Fortnite, and I said that my favorite video game was Tetris, and he said, "Yeah, you seem like the kind of person that would like Tetris." What's that supposed to mean, Beast? Well, who's laughing now? Tetris is the best battle royale game out there. Tetris 99. Download it for free on the Switch today. They don't sponsor me. So that's who Mr. Beast is for the six people watching who didn't know. Fast forward to February 2019. I'm at VidCon London. Me and Dave from Boy in a Band were getting ready to perform Life is Fun in front of a bunch of UK blokes, and I was browsing Twitter and I saw this tweet from the Beast himself. "Attention Epic Gamers. On March 6th, I'm hosting an in-real-life YouTuber battle royale with airsoft guns." Royal. That says Royal. I'm just going to use a computer voice.
"Winner gets $100,000. It will be in LA and similar to Dude Perfects' video, which BTW I really enjoyed. Reply Fuhrer Yautuber and Wandin."
The tweet was only sent 10 minutes ago. It was pretty fresh. And looking through my pocket calendar, I wasn't doing anything that day. I can make it to the event. I asked Dave, "Do you think I should do it?" I forgot what he said, but he probably said something like,
"Oh yeah, man, you'd be so great at it. When did you get so handsome? You're the best!"
So I replied to the tweet, "I can make it." Then I got added to a group chat with six other YouTubers, so I wrote, "Hello, competition." And the very next thing I saw was Mr. Beast added Logan Paul. And my mind went, Logan Paul? YouTuber's number one storytime animator, Logan Paul, recently came out as a flat earther, Logan Paul? That Logan Paul? But then Logan Paul left because he's a coward. So in the group chat, Mr. Beast explained the rules. It would be an airsoft battle, and everyone would have three balloons attached to them. And once your three balloons got popped, you were out. This match wasn't going to be a free-for-all like the Hunger Games. We were going to be on teams of three. So I was going to get paired up with two random people. I mean, I would have preferred if one of them had been a Paul boy, but no big deal. Hopefully, whoever my teammates are would know what they're doing and carry the team, because I sure as heck wouldn't. Jaden Animations was also at VidCon, and I told her, "Guess what I'm doing?
I saw your tweet. That's pretty epic, James. You're the best,"
she said. I said, "Jaden, the battle's going to be in teams of three. I don't know anyone else that's going. Do you want to go to war with me?" Now, this was a first for me. Never in my life have I ever had to ask someone, "Hey, do you want to fight in an airsoft battle royale against a bunch of other YouTubers for the chance to win $100,000? And Jaden said,
"Yeah, sure."
I asked Mr. Beast, "Are you still looking for more people for the YouTube Royal? My friend Jaden is interested, and I think it would be good if me and her were on a team because our channels are so similar." And he replied with,
"Yes, she got Pewds and Rewind. 100% want her in."
And I was like, "Oh, yeah, she did do that. I probably didn't have to send you her channel." So Jaden never publicly said she was going to be in the fight, but she was. Surprise! Mr. Beast sent us a list of people that still needed to be on a team. Since it was only me and Jaden, I got to pick someone from the list to be the third member of our team. It made me feel like the popular kids when they got to pick teams for kickball. First time I got to feel that experience, actually. I noticed one name on the list. Anthony Padilla. I've been to conventions, and I've seen how young some of you are, so I gotta explain who Anthony is. Just bear with me, big kids. Before some of you were born, there was this big YouTube channel called Smosh. And when I was 12, that was one of the YouTube channels that I watched. So imagine how gleeful I was when a big part of my childhood asked me to do a couple videos with him to go up on his channel. Since Anthony and I had already done two videos together, and he's done one with Jaden, and he pet my dog, I thought we were close enough to have him on the team. Also, two of the three people on our team are vegan, so we decided to name ourselves 66% Vegan. That's actually not true, I made that up. The day was fast approaching, and I'm gonna level with you. We did not have high hopes for winning. Anthony tweeted out,
"Tomorrow I'll be in Mr. Beast's 100K YouTube Battle Royale with my teammates The Odd Ones Out and Jaden Animation. Between us, we see a total of 3 hours of sunlight a week. Please, send us words of encouragement and support."
Everyone in the group chat was hyping up how good they were at shooting guns and how seriously they were going to take this. Meanwhile, between the three of us, we had played a total of 2 Fortnite games and a lot of Tetris. We showed up to the arena and I barely knew anyone. Keemstar was there for some reason. I don't know if Keemstar likes me, though. At first, I wasn't too worried about getting hurt, because people were going to be aiming for our balloons, not our bodies. But when I saw the gear, the balloons were just about right over our heads. So everyone was going to have to William Tell our balloons off. No big deal. None of us really need our heads anyway. No big deal. Before the main fight, there were a couple of practice rounds that were happening on a smaller field. And during the practice round, our team went into this little fort. Anthony's gun wasn't working, Jaden didn't know how to put the magazine in, and I didn't know how to aim. As soon as we left the fort, all of our balloons got obliterated.
Oh, baby, a triple! Oh, yeah!
Like I said, we didn't have high hopes. Whenever I go to an event, a question I get asked a lot is, "Will you make a video about this?" And every time my answer is always, "If something interesting happens." Look, I'm sorry, kid. I'm not just going to make a video like, "Hey guys, so I went to this school and talked to these kids about being a YouTuber, and everyone was well-behaved and super nice." Anyway, that's going to do it for this video. Be sure to check out the video where I went to Australia and signed posters for 2 hours. So I asked Jaden, "Are you going to make a video about this?" And she said,
"Probably not. But if you want to, you can."
And I said, "Yeah. Only if something interesting happens, though." And Jaden, I just want to say, thank you so much for giving me this. After the practice round, our team sat at a lunch table by ourselves because we didn't have any friends. And Jaden and Anthony talked to each other about being vegan, and I ate my chicken pesto sandwich as discreetly as possible. We also talked about potential strategies. Like, if someone started shooting at you, then just shake your head as violently as possible so that way they can't hit your balloons. "Yeah, that'll work," we told ourselves. But deep down, we knew it wouldn't work. "I just hope we're not last," I said. "I'd be happy if we made it in the top 10. There were a total of 13 teams. I would have been happy if we were in the top 10. I didn't expect to pop anyone's balloons. Just as long as we didn't lose horrifically, I'd be happy. So, I know how these videos work. About 40 people showed up to the event. There's no way that everyone was going to have an equal amount of screen time. If you're not interesting, then you're not going to make the cut. So, realizing this, our team also wanted some screen time. I drove an hour to get here. I didn't want it to go to waste. Some people took 14-hour flights from Australia to get here, so I hope they had a fun time. Yay! The match was about to start, and our team got dark green balloons, and we saw another team that had lime green balloons. We talked to the other green team, which consisted of What's Inside, his son Lincoln, and Casper Lee. We joked with them like, "Hey, other green balloons, since no one can tell us apart, maybe we should team up. Okay, see you later." But the way the match played out was interesting. We didn't get to choose where we started. The map was split up into 13 different zones, and before the match started, someone on your team would pick a number out of a hat, and whichever number you got would be the zone you started in. That way, when the match started, the teams would be equidistant from each other. And to make it more interesting, you didn't begin the game with any weapons. Those were scattered around the field. And the closer you went into the center of the map, the better the weapons were. Supposedly. That's what they told us. So we all put on our paintball masks and GoPros. One of the Hunger Games workers walked us to our zone. We looked around and saw one gun super close, one gun at a medium distance, and one gun pretty far away.
"Okay, Jaden and I will get the close gun. You go get that medium gun and cover me while I get the far gun."
Then an air horn blasted in the distance, and the game began. I ran to the medium distance gun, quickly snatched it, and ran back to where the group was. Jaden had her gun, but Anthony was empty-handed.
"Someone already grabbed the far gun,"
he said, and the team that grabbed it was the white team. And it didn't take long for them to start sending BBs our way. There wasn't a structure we could hide in, and Anthony had no way of fighting back.
"Dude, I don't have a gun, so I'm, like, sitting."
The white team pushed us into a corner of the map, and a chain-link fence stopped us from retreating any further. "Looks like we're not going to make it in the top 10 after all, vegans." But then we saw the team to our right, and it was none other than the lime green team. With very little options, we walked up to them with our hands in the air like we just don't care, hoping that they remembered the very unofficial agreement that we had between us greenies. And fortunately, they took pity on us. They let us walk past them without shooting us, and they gave Anthony a crappy handgun. And we all agreed, okay, let's not shoot each other.
We'll remember this.
We later found a better gun for Anthony, and we also found a pretty good hiding spot that let us shoot at other teams while also keeping our precious balloons covered. Every 7 minutes, the refs would close off part of the map, making it smaller, forcing the teams to get closer to each other, just like the Hunger Games. But in the meantime, we were perfectly fine waiting in our hiding spot for the 7 minutes to go by.
Would you rather eat a whole pack of cigarettes,
or smoke.
A whole pack of cigarettes,
or
sit in a dumpster overnight?
No,
it's full of garbage and poop.
I'd rather eat the calories, right?
Mmm, protein! Alright, I think we gotta make some headway, or else we're just gonna be doing nothing.
Well, we're not losing.
True.
And then after the 7 minutes, the map shrunk, and we and the lime green team got a little closer together, and What's Inside asked one of the refs, hey, is it okay if we team up? And the ref said, I don't know, I just work here. So cool, we teamed up. It was funny because we still didn't completely trust each other. One time we moved locations and Casper told Lincoln, you go in front and I'll be in the back, so if they try to shoot you, I can get them. Well, there go my murder plans. We shot at other players and they shot back. Lime green team lost some balloons, but I still had all three of mine. The map kept getting smaller and smaller, and one of the staff told us that we had to be behind this line of caution tape, but when I bent down to go under the tape, my three balloons got caught, and I was stuck. I think other people were shooting at me.
Shoot! My balloon's stuck!
But one of the workers saw my helpless self and decided to free me from his trap, and surprisingly, none of my balloons popped.
They're in that way. They're in there.
I think I got my balloon popped.
No, you're good.
What the frick?
Are these things made out of metal? Casper and Lincoln, unfortunately, weren't as lucky. All their balloons bit the dust. Our team and What's Inside moved into a bunker, Anthony had one balloon left, Jaden had two, and I still had all three of mine. I got hit in the head, back, had contusions, and fractured my neck, but that's not important. The only thing that's important is that I still had all three of my balloons. Oh, phew, someone else. We found out what was inside What's Inside's last balloon. It was helium and shame. He was standing in the bunker with us. Any one of our balloons could have been popped, but death picked him. Our lime green brethren were out. Look what's inside my hands. They're bullets. I want you to have them. And also, what's inside my heart is my faith in you guys. Avenge me. We had gotten shot at a bunch of times, yet somehow we were still in the game. The amount of teams that were left were getting small. Someone was shooting at us from our old hiding spot, and Anthony knew that there was an opening on the side he could use for a surprise attack. So Anthony stealthily walked out of the bunker and flanked the other team. And at that moment, I thought of how cool it was that someone I'd been watching for 10 years was one of my teammates. I remember voting for what food he was going to use back in Food Battle 2009? He's one of the pioneers of YouTube. He inspired countless young creators like me to start making videos. Did you know in Jake Paul's book, You Gotta Want It, Jake actually credits Smosh for inspiring him and his brother to make videos as well? Anthony!
I got him.
Was that the person who killed all of us in the training round?
Yeah, I forgot this isn't a video game, and when you shoot someone's last balloon, they can still shoot you before they realize they're out. Man, this whole balloon system seems kind of flawed. You have to keep asking people, do I still have balloons? Because you can't see how many balloons you have yourself, and there's no way of telling if you're in or out.
Anthony, take one of my balloons.
Shut up. You have to win this for us. For Team 66% Vegan. No. Team 50% Vegan. Ugh.
Only Jaden and I were left. The map was incredibly small at this point, and we were hiding behind this box and water cooler thing sticking up. Alex Ernst, who I'm a big fan of, by the way, turned the corner and I shot his last balloon. That didn't make it in the final video, so none of you would have known that.
Is that Alex?
But then, I ran out of ammo.
I'm out now. Oh, no.
Jaden didn't have any extra on her, so I couldn't do anything. We were getting shot at, and I had nothing to fight back with. I thought...
Jaden, I might have to. I might have to find a... Go find a gun somewhere.
I think the last one, if you charge him, then
Alex tried to charge me, and he lost.
Okay, so they are poppable. I'm surprised they made it this far. But then something horrible happened. Jaden said...
I'm out.
Me too.
And with that, it was over.
Wait, what do we do?
I don't know.
How are we going to pop other people's balloons without BBs? Well, this looks like it's it, Jaden. It's over. Why are we still here? Just to suffer. Every night I can feel my leg. And my arm. Even my fingers. The body I've lost. The comrades I've lost. Won't stop hurting. It's like they're all still there. You feel it too, don't you? I'm gonna make them pay.
I got him! I got him!
Got
I got him!
You got him?
Oh! Did we? Is that it?
That's it.
Oh my God!
Oh my God!
Jaden wanted me to tell you that it sounds like she's crying here, but she wasn't crying because she doesn't cry. And then the second game happened, but that no one cares about that one. And that's how Team 66% Vegan won $100,000. Splitting it three ways, we each got $33,333.33. But then we had one penny left, so we decided to donate it to charity. Okay, but for real, I do plan on doing something with the prize money, but that is another story for another time. Because this video is getting way too long, and I just want to be done with it. Actually, can you leave some suggestions about what I should do? Because I'm not entirely sure what I should do.
Oh, so that means we have to start the video. We have to give it, like, an introduction.
Okay.
You have to do that.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Ugh, that was bad. What's going on, everyone? This is your boy, The Odd Ones Out, back again with another crazy video. I'm here with Jaden Animations and Something Else YT. Mm-hmm. Say hello.
Hello.
Wait, do we have to be more enthusiastic? Like,
hey, it's me, Something Else YT. Don't be fake. I guess let's just get right into the game. We have to probably explain the rules. That would be smart.
James, you thought of this idea. So.
Well, way to throw me under the bus. You'll probably get it as we go along, but basically we all chose words, just a three-letter word, and then we made an acronym for that word. So an example would be bus would be big ugly snail, and then we would draw a big ugly snail, and then the other people would have to try and guess bus. And we'll give them clues. We'll push them in the right direction. Well, it's going to be a kind of a guessing game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Jaden are basically competing right now.
Prepare to lose, Adam.
So this is a three-letter word. People watch my videos for my artistic ability. That's for sure.
I'm, like, trying to concentrate because I want to beat Jaden.
Let's hope this is good. Let's hope you guys can get this. I'm such an artist.
He's narwhal.
Falling on... Fam? Is it fam?
Fam? Like yes fam or yas fam?
Fan as in, like, air conditioner fan.
What would the three words be?
F-A-N. Falling under
narwhals.
Oh,
did I get it?
I heard
no,
falling.
I
heard
falling.
I
heard it first.
Oh.
You said fan. It was falling under narwhals.
Yes.
I said fan, but I meant falling under narwhals. Leave that one to you, Adam.
Oh, and I have to draw Jaden. Oh, shoot. I have to draw Jaden in front of Jaden. Perfect. So that's kind of how you play the game, right? Falling under narwhals.
I get it.
You get it. Good. You won this round, so I hope you get it.
So it's my turn, right? You ready?
Yes. I've never been more ready in my entire life.
We kind of have to, like, wait for the whole picture to be finished.
Kinda.
So, I guess, Adam, how was your day?
I'm doing good, James. How was your day?
It's all right.
Well, that sucks.
You guys want to start guessing?
Treehouse box.
Is it under something again?
Yeah.
Box underground?
Yeah.
Bug.
Wait.
Bug.
Bug.
Yeah, it's a bug.
Box underground.
That was so fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, wrecked.
Is this my turn now?
Now we're up in the stakes. Adam's doing four-letter word. Did you guys know that laser is an acronym?
Okay.
I only know it because I had it in the video once, and it's light amplification by simulated emissions of radiation. Which actually, that doesn't even spell out laser.
Yeah, what's the Z? So, wait, is it supposed to be laser as in S? Wait, is there two ways of spelling laser?
You're asking the wrong person on how to spell.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Cut to, like, all your misspellings in your videos.
I've done this new tactic where I purposely misspell things, like, really wrong. So when I actually do misspell something, people will be like, oh, that's just his thing. He misspells things.
So you cheat.
So, like, when you actually do a real typo, it's like, oh, I totally meant to do that.
Yeah, exactly. My teacher's part two video, there was a chalkboard that said how to escape a restaurant. And I used the wrong two on purpose, but restaurant was misspelled. So, like, I totally meant to misspell restaurant.
You're right. I believe you.
Is it dirty orange?
Can I solve the puzzle?
Yes.
Is it Doug?
No.
Whoa.
What? I can't read those hieroglyphics.
Change your stabilizer, dude.
You know what, James? I will.
Can I solve the puzzle?
Yes.
Dome. D-O-M-E. Dirty orange. Overly misses.
No.
It's dirty orange?
Yeah.
You dirty orange.
Ooh, get demonetized. He missed.
And he, and if he hit him, he would be dead.
What? Dirty orange, very extreme. Dove.
No.
I keep wanting to say miss.
Dirty orange might
kill.
Wait.
Wait, kill?
Yes.
Dunk.
Yes.
Dirty orange
wait,
can't
yeah, you
kill.
Got it.
Dunk.
Wait, who said dunk?
What? I didn't say it. I said...
Donk.
Donk?
Yeah, wait.
What kind of word is donk? Oh. Is it dirty orange never kills? Or
what is another word?
No. It's like no. Nearly.
Yes.
Nearly killed. Yeah.
So it's a four-letter word. It's going to be fun. This is going to be fun.
Dinosaur.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not going to say it anymore. I don't want to give you guys...
I want to get the little letter hints or letter points. Those are like 0.3 points, right?
Are we keeping score?
No.
Bronchiosaur.
What?
Underwear. Swimming suit.
Bronchiosaurus underwear.
Isn't it like a brachiosaurus? People are going to let us know.
I just know them from Land Before Time, and in Land Before Time they're called long necks. And also leaves are called tree stars.
I had a computer game of that, of Land Before Time, and there was like this hay maze, and I was really scared of that game.
Tony the Tiger. Angry Tony the Tiger.
Is that Tony the Tiger?
Is it? I don't know.
Tiger. It's just a tiger. Angry tiger.
Yeah, that's actually good. An angry tiger.
Okay, so bronchio stores under an underwear angry tiger.
I'm going to do something, and you might be a little confused on what I'm about to do.
Okay.
In my mind, it makes sense.
Justin Bieber's...
Is it an emo tiger?
Emo tiger.
Whoa.
Mark a tiger. I was wrong.
Maybe I should start giving you clues now.
I think he's like a, it's not a phase mom tiger.
You give it like a little Hitler stash.
That's makeup.
Oh, okay.
Jeez. Actually, you're right. That is kind of, no, it's makeup. We're all agreeing that this is a tiger.
Yeah.
So angry emo tiger with bronchiosaur underwear.
This is a big clue.
Tumblr.
Tumblr uh-huh. tiger.
A feminist tiger.
Let's throw out some clues. That's still the wrong layer. What was this dinosaur called again?
A bronchiosaur.
I think it was brachiosaurus.
Okay. Brachiosaurus.
A long neck. Eosaur.
Cut to like all your misspellings in your videos.
Amon. Okay, so that's the first one. Now I'm just coloring it. Now I'm just like adding some little details.
B-A-E. Is it bean?
Bean.
This is so fun. I like this. What is he wearing?
Panties.
But.
Okay, but yeah, but what's the sentence? What's the sentence?
Bronchiosaur underwear, Tony the Tiger.
Tumblr Tiger.
Tumblr Tiger.
No.
Tumblr shaming.
Underwear. Ticks off. Triggers Tiger,
yes. Yes.
Wait, what was it?
Triggers Tigers.
My favorite word.
Yeah. So it's butt. I kind of want to finish this drawing now.
James?
No, I'm not done yet. Okay.
So mine is four letters now.
Wait, I can't see your thing.
Look with your eyes.
Well, you're right. What was I thinking?
I was like, should I draw a stick figure? Nah, I'll try a little bit.
I think me and Adam are closely looking at the drawing, just, you know, thinking of things, and we're not talking, and we're just being silent.
So, James.
What, Adam? Parents.
Am I right? A fish. An eel.
Yeah.
Oh, mom eel. meat. Mom eel meme.
What? You got the word, but you didn't get the...
Mom eating meat eel.
My eels. Mom eating my eels.
Mom eating my eel.
No.
Mom eating Marco's eel.
Look at all those eels. Mom eating many
mom
eels?
Mom eating more
yeah,
eels.
Mom yes! Mom eating many eels.
I had it. I had that. I blame myself for saying it out loud. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
This is like advanced territory. We had a hard time with butt, girl, dress, lady, teacher.
Wait, you got one of the words.
Is it James?
What?
Adam, you don't have to go fast. It's okay. You can take your time. You can draw good if you want.
Boxing glove. Tiny lady?
Getting close?
Midget lady.
No. She's ants. I mean, wait.
Answering?
More tomatoes.
Oh, so they are tomatoes?
No, they're not tomatoes. You're close, though.
They're apples. They're big cherries. Are they big cherries?
Okay, so they're apples.
Lady answering apples?
Lap. Just L-A-A-A-A.
Another one. Teeny tiny, is there two T's?
Something lady answering. Tiny lady answering.
Apples. Is it llama?
What?
Little lady answering many apples.
You just pick up an apple, you go, hello, and then there's someone on the other line goes, is banana there? I actually lied to you guys. This is a six-letter word. I thought of it, and then I was thinking of acronyms for it, and then I said, wait, this is a six-letter word. Ah, who cares?
Is it James? That's a five-letter word. Never mind.
James.
Charmander.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, Charmander. Angry Charmander asking for lots of pickles.
How'd you get it so quick, Adam?
So, Jaden, what's the deal with airline food?
Funny you mention it. When I was getting a ticket for Europe, there was like a meal option because it was like an 8-hour flight. There was like meal options, and one of them said bland meal. Like, yes, I would like one bland meal, please.
I would like my meal extra bland.
Egg.
That's a kind of close.
Polywhirl. Cinnamon buns.
Cinnabon.
Oh, what is
it? Is it another Pokemon?
Pokey.
Is this the seventh generation?
Meatloaf.
Egg roll.
Oh!
Charmander eating egg rolls and he's angry.
Charmander angry at egg roll that's too hot for consumption. Sassy egg roll. Sexy egg roll.
Oh!
Charmander angry at a sexy egg roll.
Is it cheese?
Charmander hunting every exy sexy egg rolls.
How did you get egg roll?
Because I drew an egg roll, Jaden.
Charmander humping, like humph.
Everyone?
What?
Charmander hearing everyone eat sexy egg rolls. No, that's not it. I like to say my words with enthusiasm just in case I do get it right.
Enormous sexy egg roll.
Dang it, Jaden's doing better than me.
I dislike...
Charmander hates.
Yeah. Charmander hates everyone's enormous sexy egg roll.
Good job, team. Okay, so this one is five letters.
Oh, I think I know one of the letters.
Ant.
It's an A, yes. Are those petunias? Oh, and those are gardening tools.
Yeah.
Electric ants gardening. Egad. Oh, there's a little elephant.
Okay.
Wait, long elephant.
Yeah?
A wiener dog elephant.
You guys are really close.
Wiener elephant.
No, Adam, you're going farther away.
Electric ants gardening long elephants.
Yeah, so what's the word?
Eagle.
Wait, no. Energy.
Yaggle. Eagle.
Dang it.
Yaggle.
I got it. Caca.
I'd like to guess. Yaggle for 500.
So, I guess everyone go watch everyone else's videos now, if you haven't already. When people see this, we've already been to VidCon, right? Oh, VidCon was so fun, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
I love VidCon.
I love that one part. Mm. James, I can't believe you said that on the panel.
Okay, well, thanks for watching, everyone. And as always, wear your seatbelt. Okay, bye.
Bye.
I don't like that bye. Don't put that one in.
Guys, I have a brilliant idea. What if we do the In My Feelings Challenge? What do you think? What's the In My Feelings challenge? It was that dance people did outside of their moving cars in 2018. That's stupid.
I know!
It's weird to me that YouTube Rewind 2018 came out over 5 years ago, which makes it old enough to be something to reminisce about. There's a fresh generation of iPad kids who don't get to experience the yearly tradition of coming together as a community and watching the newest YouTube Rewind. And absolutely hating it. In case you all forgot, the website YouTube.com used to make these celebratory videos showcasing all the important events and memes that had happened throughout the year. And all these YouTubers would get together and do a silly little dance, and everyone had a grand old time. And since these videos were produced by the very platform you're currently watching this on, Rewinds would always receive a lot of attention. Now, according to my memory, YouTube Rewinds were pretty well received. At first. But you see, as time went on, the general public and the YouTubers involved started to grow weary. People were throwing around words like cringe, and this isn't what YouTube represents, and ah-ha, that's that. Ah, that's that. And it all accumulated to YouTube's magnum opus, YouTube Rewind 2018. Everyone controls Rewind. Hashtag YouTube Rewind. Which is a video that was so universally hated that it holds the world record for most disliked video ever. A record it will now hold perpetually because of the whole dislike thing. The audience wasn't happy, the YouTubers involved weren't happy, until finally YouTube snapped and was like, alright, fine, if no one wants it, we'll stop doing it. We were just doing this as a favor anyways. And so YouTube discontinued the Rewind project indefinitely, with 2018 being the last time we ever got a Rewind.
What about me, James?
How dare you even consider yourself worthy of being called a Rewind 2019? A top 10 video? Really? At least 2011 had Rebecca Black hosting. Mm-hmm. Leave 2019. Before I tell you the top 10 ways on how I'm gonna hurt you. So getting back to the actual last YouTube Rewind, you know, the one with the most dislikes in the whole world, if we skip to 3 minutes and 2 seconds into that video, we see... Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge! Oh, geez. That's me. I know I'm a little late to the party, but since we've all had enough time to grow and reflect as people, I would like to finally share some of my thoughts and experiences working on YouTube Rewind 2018. The first thing I want to talk about is how none of the YouTubers involved got any type of monetary compensation. At least none of the ones I talked to did. This was a big issue that a lot of other YouTubers had in their expose videos, but I personally was not bothered by it. Was I getting paid in exposure? Yes. In fact, I actually lost money doing this because I had to get my friend Rush to animate some of the scenes, so I, you know, paid him for his work. But what I'm trying to tell you is that as much as I'm about to complain about YouTube Rewind, don't feel any sort of empathy for me, okay? I did this to myself. I think the best piece of advice I could give you is that if YouTube ever reaches out to you and is like, hey, do you want to be a part of Rewind? You should say, let me read the script first. But I didn't know that in 2018. And I also didn't know that in 2017. If you look at YouTube Rewind 2017 and watch all the way to the end, keep going. Right there. Right there in the credits is me and Jaden doing a floss in space. It was a lot cooler back then. They also wanted all the animators to animate our characters in the middle of a jello fight, and I think they wanted to put our cartoon characters over footage of real-life YouTubers in the middle of a jello fight, but they gave us no direction, and I don't think they ever filmed a scene where they were like, okay, real-life YouTubers, remember to leave that spot empty because that's where the animated guy's gonna go, because you know they gotta plan that kind of stuff out ahead of time, right? So instead, they just threw our unusable animated jello fight with no background at the very end as this extremely out-of-place post-credit scene. So 2017 was pretty uneventful for me. Like, yeah, I was in YouTube Rewind, but, you know, I was in the credits. Who's going to stick around and watch the credits, you know? But 2018 was going to be my year. Rewind wanted me back, and this time they were giving me a speaking role.
Holy shit! My line was going to be, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. And then the YouTuber Swoozy, who would be in his real-life human form, would say, right? And then we'd fist bump Who Framed Roger Rabbit style. So do you remember that trend in 2018 where people were doing that dance outside of their moving car? Well, apparently, that was called the In My Feelings challenge. Back in 2018, I didn't even know it was called that. I thought it was called stupid. Now, if you've at all watched YouTube Rewind 2018, Everyone Controls Rewind, hashtag YouTube Rewind, you might be wondering why, after I specifically suggest we do the In My Feelings challenge, that not a single YouTuber or talk show host can be seen dancing outside of a moving vehicle. That's because YouTube didn't want to promote unsafe behavior. So they didn't want to show anyone dancing outside of a car. So they weren't really doing the challenge then, were they? YouTube, if you don't want to promote unsafe behavior, don't promote the In My F***ing Feelings challenge. Kids are still going to look up the In My Feelings challenge and then watch multiple videos of people dancing outside of cars on YouTube.
We don't want to promote unsafe behavior.
It's on your platform, dog. You know, looking back, that should have been my first red flag, but I was still optimistic. I was so excited to be a part of this huge project, and I knew there were going to be a bunch of YouTubers involved, but I was going to be one of the few animated ones. I was going to stand out. I was going to be the odd one out. Knowing how Rewind handled animation in 2017, when they asked me to be a part of 2018, I told them, hey, love the line, but I think it would be a good idea if we met in person, you know, and that way you can show me everything you're planning, and I can ask you all the right questions. And they agreed and invited me to visit the set the day they were filming Swoozy's line. So I was there, physically behind the camera, when Swoozy said, right? And then fist bumped nothing. I got to experience what it was like to be on a real film set with actors and directors and costumes and catering and makeup, and it was a lot, honestly, for just one line. And maybe it was because they had booked Swoozy for a full hour, but they had this beautiful man say, right? And then fist bump nothing no less than 50 times. It's one line, guys. I think we got it. And then after, like, take 87, my stomach sank when the director said, okay, Swoozy, how about you try saying, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. Wait a minute. That's my line. Are we changing it? Which line am I animating now? Do you want me to do both, just like how you got Swoozy to do both? And what, oh, you'll pick your favorites? I asked the director right there which line was I animating, and he said he was going to let me know. And then we went outside and filmed Swoozy dance in front of a brick wall, and which parts of him dancing was I going to animate my guy next to? He said he was going to let me know that too. So I took all the information I learned that day and referred it back to the other animators. What they wanted were two shots. They wanted 5 seconds of our characters dancing, and they wanted another shot of all of us sitting around a campfire singing horribly. After doing some quick math, I realized that if all 7 of us animators did a 5-second dance, that would be 35 seconds of cartoons dancing, which for a YouTube Rewind would be a lot of screen time. I had a sinking feeling that they weren't going to be using our full 5-second clips, and they didn't even let me know. Now, for my life-changing speaking role, I had to record my line on my own, which normally wouldn't be a problem. But in late 2018, I had just moved to California, and I didn't have my own setup set up. And to make the whole situation worse, I was only given 1 week to finish my animation and record my line. So, you know, the clock was ticking. Now, I think the second best piece of advice I could give you is that if you're ever in need of a quick jerry-rigged sound booth, go into your closet and hide under a comforter. In fact, hello, real-life human James here, coming to you on a Blue Yeti inside of a bathroom. The acoustics in here are terrible. Could you imagine voicing a cartoon character in this? Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, it doesn't work. Now, all right, and now we're here inside of our makeshift sound booth, and you can hopefully hear the quality change right away, you know, like, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, you know, we don't need expensive sound booths to have a good time. But back in 2018, I wanted the most important line in my career to be recorded in a professional sound booth. Luckily, I was in luck. You see, California is one of the few places home to something called a YouTube space. A YouTube space advertises itself as a place to aid content creators, providing them with facilities to create content for their YouTube channels. And to access said facilities, you needed at least 10,000 subscribers. A little weird they put a number on it, but I get it. I had just moved to California. I knew I was going to be hitting this place up all the time. When I first went to the YouTube space, I didn't call ahead or set up an appointment or anything, because there wasn't an option to do so on the website. But I figured they would have to help me out, right? The line I needed to record was for a YouTube Rewind. And you're a YouTube space! Like, Susan personally asked me to be here, you know? So I drove an hour to the space, I went inside, showed them my sub count, and they said that in order to use the facilities, I had to fill out all these forms on my computer back home. But it's for a YouTube Rewind. Then I drove another hour back home and started filling out the forms, but by the time I got to the quizzes, I realized, I think this wild goose chase is probably going to take longer than a week to resolve. With time running out, I gingerly asked my new friend Aaron if I could use his setup, and he said yes, and I didn't even have to show him my sub count. I mean, I showed him anyway, though. So the line you hear me say in the 2018 Rewind was recorded in the Game Grumps office, which I think means, at the very least, Game Grumps deserves to be credited in the description of Rewind. Come on, YouTube. They were the only ones who took me in when your own company turned me away. The deadline was fast approaching. I mean, it was fast approaching as soon as I got it. But I've been in crunch mode before, and I'm sure the nameless video editors were just trying to hit their impossibly tight deadlines, too. I reminded myself what I was making all of these sacrifices for. Everyone was going to unanimously love this video and what it represents and look up my channel afterwards and subscribe. December 6th, 2018, a day that changed history. It was raining that day, and the world was exposed to what YouTube had been cooking up, and they all collectively hated it. Like, a lot. Like, to the point where I would be lucky if I didn't lose subscribers. I think the audience knew that none of the YouTubers involved had any say in the creative process. We were just reading our lines from YouTube script, you know? So at least I get to say I'm in the most disliked video in history, and no one's too mad at me. Right? So was all of this stress worth it? Now, I got paid in exposure, and the exposure was overwhelmingly negative. In fact, I think Rewind was only positive for one other YouTuber. Do you have any guesses? Jaden motherfucking Animations pulled off the biggest prank of 2018. One of the reasons people disliked 2018's Rewind was because PewDiePie, the number one YouTuber at the time, wasn't included. But Jaden, being the genius that she is, knew he wasn't going to be included again, so she snuck in a PewDiePie reference into her 5-second dance, and no one caught it, and it made the final cut. Jaden was crowned the least cringy part of Rewind, and everyone loved her, and she got a big boost in subscribers, and all I gotta say to that is, good job, Jaden. How are you enjoying that cake and eating it, too? Now, there were a lot of valid reasons why people disliked 2018's Rewind. One of them being that the video starts out with Will Smith? He's not a YouTuber. But they didn't seem to mind when 2016 started out with The Rock and 2017 started with The Colbert Show, but whatever. And I don't know if you remember what YouTube was like in 2018, but it was in the news a couple of times, you know, over a few small things. However, with all of that being said, I do genuinely miss YouTube Rewinds. Getting to wake up and go, wow, it's December, and a new YouTube Rewind just dropped. I'm going to watch it. And then I get to see a handful of YouTubers I recognize do a dance and not recognize any of the other YouTubers. And then I get to see the rest of the internet's reaction to it. It's better than Christmas for me. Even if it's the cringiest video ever, we still all watched it together as a community. And I think that's what I miss the most. When YouTube felt more like a community. As long as it's not a top 10 video, I welcome back YouTube Rewinds with open arms. And if they do make a comeback, I don't think I'd want to be a part of them. Not because I got burned in 2018, but because I wouldn't want to rob another ignorant YouTuber of the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be taken advantage of and work for free and be a part of history. For now, we just have to live with the 9 rewinds we do have. But if you're like me and are just dying to see more YouTube Rewind content, and I know you are because you're still here, I've discovered a pretty massive Easter egg. In the description of Rewind 2018 is a link to See All the Easter Eggs. And for your viewing pleasure are 13 brand new shorts that I can only describe as skits that were edited together with existing Rewind footage. I don't think that's what an Easter egg is. They're not that funny and are pretty hard to watch, but isn't that what Rewind's all about? Have a good night.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Don't you ever say, because I want you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
And I want
you. Don't you ever say, hey.
Oh, that's that.
I don't know the rest of the words.
Oh, that's that.
All right, I think we got it. When you're watching any animated piece of media, I think it's easy to forget that you're watching drawings move. Excuse me? What kind of Harry Potter dark magic is this? Since when did drawings move? I drew a picture of a dog once, but it hasn't moved at all, not even to play fetch. Well, what you're really watching isn't actually moving. What you're really watching is a series of individual frames played at a rapid speed on a liquid crystal display screen that emit photons into your eyeball receptors that get processed by your brain into what it perceives as movement. It was all a trickery, you see, a ruse that you fell for hook, line, and sinker. Now, a lot of you probably already know about the concept of the frame rate, but what I want you to understand is that in cartoons, every head turn, every blink, everything that happens had to be meticulously drawn by a person who studied anatomy and knows about physics and movement, knowing full well that their drawing was only going to be seen for a fraction of a fraction of a second. And you weren't even watching. You were on your phone. Today, I would like to turn back the sands of time and talk about some of the ways animators were able to achieve the illusion of life without the help of modern technology. I hope by watching you can better understand and appreciate the medium of animation as much as I do, because the amount of dedication and hard work that goes into just making drawings move is unreal. And if you're like me and already know a bit about animation history and find this kind of stuff fascinating, don't worry, I didn't have a lot of friends growing up either. Now, we know that animation is just copious amounts of drawings being shown in rapid succession. But how the fuck are we going to get people to look at copious amounts of drawings in rapid succession without a computer? Well, believe it or not, there's actually quite a few things we can do without even having to use a camera. One method we can try is by drawing out all of our frames on a stack of paper. I know that's the time-consuming part, but after we're done doing that, we'll hang up all our drawings side by side on a very long wall. Then we'll ride a bike next to the wall and continuously have our head turned facing the wall, and if we pedal fast enough, we'll zip by the drawings so fast that it'll look like they're moving.
Hey, look! It's a horse!
Okay, you're probably thinking, that's not how animation is made. And you're right. This method of animation is totally impractical, but not impossible. This type of human transportational animation has been done before in subway tunnels, with the results looking pretty legit. I mean, this minion looks like he's totally moving. I might as well be in the cinema. And for those of the gamer variety, YouTuber Pale of Pears was able to achieve this method of animation flawlessly in Minecraft. But if you wanted to do something more practical, you could instead take your drawings off the really long wall and then stack them up like a book and then just flip through the paper quickly, making a flipbook. If you have some sticky notes lying around that you forgot about in a junk drawer somewhere, you could make a pretty simple ball bouncing animation really quickly, with the results being, you know, kind of cool. A fun fact, this type of animation was featured in every single copy of the Animorphs books, which I never read. I would just flip through the pages and watch the children in the corner transform into elephants and starfish and this
weird blue alien centaur thing. And what the heck was going on in these books, man? Okay, this next method of showing people drawings in rapid succession, it's going to be a little bit crazy. I don't want to freak you out, but it's basically on the same level as rocket science, okay? We're going to have to jump up a whole dimension for this one. What you're going to do is sculpt out a three-dimensional figure of whatever you want to animate. Let's animate, I don't know, this guy jumping. So first, I'm going to sculpt my guy just standing there, just being a dude. This will be frame one. Now, okay, I know some of you are probably thinking, oh, I see where this is going. You're going to take a picture of the sculpture, then change its pose slightly, take a picture of that, and then slightly change the pose over and over while continuously starting and stopping the camera, making it seem like our subject has some sort of motion. No, actually, we're not going to be doing any of that. Cameras haven't been invented yet in this hypothetical. What we're doing instead is making a whole new sculpture that will be the next frame of our animation. So it'll be our guy again, bending his legs a little bit, getting ready for the jump. Alright, neat. That's frame two. Now let's do this a total of, I don't know, 16 times? That sounds good. Let's also make the 16th sculpture look like it came before the first sculpture. So you understand it's going to go from the 16th sculpture back to the first one. It's a loop, like a TikTok. We're doing a TikTok loop. Now we're going to take all 16 of our sculptures and space them out evenly on a round table. Sorry, Arthur, I'm going to need this. Do you all remember that classic kids movie made in the 70s about a pig and a spider? Yeah, Charlotte's Web? Remember how it made us a lot of money? Wait, didn't we already have this conversation? Yeah, we did. But we're remaking this conversation with better graphics and Will Smith.
Yeah.
But why would we remake something that's already good on its own when we could be making something totally original?
Because, Ethan, we don't want to take risks, and this'll make us more money.
But won't it be obvious to the audience that we're only doing these remakes for the money?
They'll watch it anyways.
I don't want you to think that I think that all sequels and remakes are bad. One of my favorite movies is a spin-off, and I'm very excited for the remake of The Dark Crystal to come out. And if you think I'm going to make a video talking about it when it comes out, you are absolutely correct. So Disney is remaking a bunch of classical movies into live action. They did it with Tarzan, Alice in Wonderland, and they did it with 101 Dalmatians twice. And as someone who enjoys cartoons a little too much, I think it would be cool if they remade Treasure Planet or Atlantis into live action. Both of those movies are underrated and have a lot of high-stake action-packed adventure that would be perfect for a reboot. And if they did get a reboot, it would introduce a new generation of kids to these awesome movies. But that's just my opinion. I'm sure Disney has good reasons for making sequels and spin-offs. Speaking of Disney sequels, I bet some of you forgot the very old straight-to-VHS Disney sequels. I try to forget about them every day. You can have your own opinion on the Disney sequels, but all the ones that went straight to VHS are terrible. Even The Lion King 2? That one emo lion was kinda hot. Did I stutter? I know all those sequels were technically done by a different studio, but let's just hope that Disney will finally break the bad sequel streak with Frozen 2. Or they should just let it go straight to VHS. Some franchises like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings have long overarching stories that are designed to have multiple installments, and as long as the studio doesn't stretch out one book into three movies, then those types of movies are absolutely fine. But I don't want to talk about those movies. I want to talk about sequels to standalone films. Now, I believe that a sequel to a standalone film can be done, but it's a delicate process. Because in the first movie, you establish the characters and the world they live in, then the protagonist has to overcome a problem, usually defeating a villain, and then the characters live happily ever after, and the story is all wrapped up nicely with a bow, and just, what a nice story we got there. I'm just gonna set it down and watch it from time to time and not change it one bit. But then a sequel comes along and says, oh, you thought the characters lived happily ever after? And then rips off the nice bow and says there's another more evil villain who wasn't mentioned in the first movie for some reason. If a sequel turns out bad, it can devalue the original movie. There's a reason we don't talk about Atlantis 2 or Pocahontas 2. Or Mulan 2 or Hunchback 2 or Aladdin 2 or Cinderella 2 or Beauty and the Beast 2 or Tarzan 2. Because they didn't happen. So that's why I'm always impressed whenever a good sequel is made. And a studio that I think does an amazing job at making sequels is called DreamWorks. But I've noticed a pattern with DreamWorks franchises that I've coined the DreamWorks Treequel Paradox. I think the right word might be trilogy, but I'm just going to say trequel. You see, DreamWorks has a track record of creating amazing sequels, but pretty subpar trequels. Here's what I mean. Now, keep in mind that these are not my opinion. These reviews are objectively correct facts. And also, I just want to say I know that these movies are kids' movies, but I like animated movies more than real ones. And I'm a cartoon character, so Shrek 1. Great movie, great characters, great message, 10 onion layers out of 10. Shrek 2, it's the first movie in history to be better than the original, and it created the best music video of all time. I need 11 heroes out of 10. Shrek 3? Not in my swamp. Okay, I know we might not all agree, but here's another example. Kung Fu Panda 1, perfect movie. Any movie with anthropomorphic animals is always a win in my book. I think we have a best-selling franchise on our panda paws. Kung Fu Panda 2, just as good as the original. How many sequels have an animated bird as a villain? Besides Stuart Little 2. So far, we got 10s across the board, but then Kung Fu Panda 3 comes along and... I'm sorry, Jablinski, I just wasn't feeling this one. Which is why I was so worried for How to Train Your Dragon 3, and let's just say the DreamWorks trequel paradox didn't break its trend. However, there's one franchise that doesn't follow the DreamWorks trequel paradox, and it haunts my dreams. Works. And that franchise is Madagascar. I remember loving this movie as a kid, and apparently I wasn't the only kid who enjoyed it because it made $193,595,521. So DreamWorks made two more of these movies, and created the thing that haunts my dreams. Now, personally, I don't really care for these movies. They're fine. I haven't rewatched them at all, so 5 out of 10. But there's another movie in this franchise. A movie that shouldn't be as good as it is, and honestly, I'm a little embarrassed to admit that it might make the list of my top 5 favorite movies. I don't think enough people are talking about this movie, so I'm going to be the one who breaks the ice. That metaphor is relevant because we're talking about Penguins of Madagascar. Penguins of Madagascar is the best movie that features penguins ever. Better than Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2, and it's 1,000 times more realistic than March of the Penguins. There's a scene where the penguins fall off an airplane and go hopping from one airplane to another. It's so entertaining, and it's all done in one continuous camera shot. So I'm not talking with a hint of irony when I say that this scene is a cinematic masterpiece. I don't remember when I first watched Penguins of Madagascar. It came out when I was 18, so I'm probably not the target demographic. But I remember after watching it thinking, wow, that's a good movie. And I didn't think about that movie again until years later on Halloween night 2018. I was in a Discord call with some friends who were also spending their Halloween night behind a computer, and naturally we were discussing which Madagascar sequel was better. Some people actually liked the second one, which was surprising, and I said, well, no matter what you think of the sequels, at least we can all agree that Penguins of Madagascar is better than both of them, right? And everyone in the call was like, what are you talking about? And instead of watching a scary movie that Halloween night, we all virtually watched a movie about penguins together, and I think everyone liked it. Okay, let's talk about another studio, Pixar. Pixar movies do a good job at appealing to a wide audience. Kids like them because they're a cartoon, and adults like them because of their heavy themes like old people dying. Almost every movie Pixar has made has been a cinematic classic. Penguins of Madagascar, however, is not one of those emotionally inducing movies. It doesn't teach a thought-provoking life lesson. It's an hour and a half of penguins fighting an octopus, and I love it. Every morning when I watch Penguins of Madagascar, I feel like a kid again. I am jealous of the writing in this movie. Okay, there's one fart joke, but that's my only complaint. Now, do I think Penguins is better than all of these Pixar movies? No, definitely not. But I do think this movie is really good, and IMDb gave it a 6.7 when it clearly deserves a 10. I don't know if this video convinced you to watch Penguins of Madagascar, but if you're retroactively looking for the next summer blockbuster movie to watch, then it's got my recommendation. James, are you being sponsored by Penguins? I wish. There wasn't really a point to this video. I just wanted an excuse to talk about my favorite DreamWorks spinoff. So, in conclusion, I'm really excited for The Dark Crystal 2 coming out on Netflix. The show's being released on August 30th, which is coincidentally this channel's 5-year anniversary. So don't expect me to work that day. I'm sort of stealing this idea from Jaden Animations. Wait, no, that's not right. I'm not stealing it. I'm plagiarizing it. Jaden did a video talking about random thoughts she had, and you should all go watch it. And I thought, hey, I think randomly sometimes. So Jaden, is it alright if I make a video about my random thoughts? I hope you say yes, because I just did. What is happiness? Well, it's a chemical in your brain.
And how do you get that chemical?
Well, it's just a little something I like to call drugs. I think humans make fun of hairless animals way too much. We think that all hairless animals are ugly. Just go to Google Images and type in hairless animal, and you'll probably think the animals you see there are ugly as well. But we all seem to forget that we're hairless animals too. If anything, other animals should think that we're ugly. So I look at this phenomenon and I have a theory. I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry. My dad never taught me how to shave, and one time I cut myself shaving right above my lip, and for the rest of the day, all I could smell was blood. I don't know why I mentioned the dad part. You know how websites will ask you to type in a bunch of misshapen letters to make sure you're not a robot? That's called a CAPTCHA. And some of those CAPTCHAs are impossible. Sometimes I look at a CAPTCHA and think, am I a robot? I just wanted to send some email. I didn't want to question my identity. I wasn't ready for an existential crisis, Club Penguin. Sorry, that joke is dead. Just like Club Penguin. So here's the random thought. What if we lived in a robot society and robots had to prove that they weren't human to make a Facebook account? I think their CAPTCHA would be an optical illusion. Like, to sign into a website, it'll show two lines and say, prove you're not a human, which line is bigger? Optical illusions are like CAPTCHAs for people. Every time you paint a room, it gets a little bit smaller. And if it takes you one can of paint to paint an entire room, then the room gets smaller by one can of paint. You brought a can of paint inside the room, and you never took it out. Every time you smell something, molecules from that thing get sucked up into your nose, and that's how you're able to smell it. So that means every time you smell something, it gets a tiny bit lighter. Do archaeologists have lingo and jokes that only other archaeologists will understand? Like, there's a whole other world of jokes that I won't get to experience because I'm not an archaeologist. Like, one day, two archaeologists could be digging a hole, and one says, I'm not finding anything! And then the other guy says, well, you know what they say in the archaeology business. And I don't know what they say because I'm not an archaeologist. How about we look up jokes for archaeologists? Why did Robin Hood pull out of the archery contest? He found it an arrowing experience. Okay, get that one? It just wasn't that funny. Nor was it about archaeology. Or maybe it was, and I just don't get it. We'll never know. Where did Caesar keep his armies? Up his sleeves. Okay, I had to get this one explained to me, but armies is supposed to be your arm, like your body arm, and your armies go up your sleeves. Get it? Except Julius Caesar wore a toga, so he didn't even have sleeves. And you could just say this about anyone who had an army. Where did Hitler keep his armies? Up his sleeves! Ha ha ha! When you ask someone what time it is, sometimes they'll say, it's a quarter to blank. And first off, I really hate that way of telling time, because now I have to use math just to know what time it is. Someone will say, it's a quarter to eight. Okay, so a quarter to eight, well, a quarter is 25, so 8 minus 25, it's like negative 13. Wait, no, we're using time numbers, so a quarter of 60, that's like 10 minutes, so 8 minus 60 over 4, you carry the 2, and oh, it's 8 o'clock now. We usually only say it's a quarter to when referring to whole numbers, but I wish people would use other times, like, hey, what time is it? Oh, it's a quarter to 8:37. Did you know that mosquitoes prefer type O blood more than any other blood type? Does that mean our blood tastes different? How can mosquitoes sense what blood type we are? Do mosquitoes think we come in different flavors? What if there was a restaurant for mosquitoes and the menus just had our blood types? Are there mosquito snobs? Like one mosquito would say, oh, I see you're drinking O negative. Of course you'd like that blood. Everyone likes that blood. I got that whole idea from a conversation I had with Jaden, and I said I was going to use it in my random thoughts video, so I'm just stealing everything from Jaden. You know what I think would be a funny contradiction? A fedora with a Tumblr logo on it. Whenever you leave for a trip, people will say, drive safe, which is fine. I always appreciate safe driving tips, but when you go flying in an airplane, sometimes people will say, have a safe flight, but I literally have no control if a plane flies safely or not. Why are you telling me to fly safe? I should be the one telling the pilot that. Hey, I just wanted to say that a lot of my friends are counting on you, so you better not screw this up. I appreciate the sentiment, but how do I fly unsafe? Maybe go on my phone before we take off, not watch the safety video? Blow the plane up? Why do people care so much about fashion? If I bought some really nice clothes and I go to a party, out of everyone in that room, I'm the only one who can't see what I'm wearing, unless I look down the entire time. I can go to a party and be wearing just a bunch of clown makeup, and as long as there's no mirrors around and everyone plays it cool, I would have no idea that I'm wearing anything. And also, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing, because I look good in everything. I think this whole YouTube thing has given me a confidence boost. I wouldn't say it's an unhealthy amount, but it's given me confidence that I didn't have in high school. My parents bought me a Pokemon shirt for Christmas, and yeah, I like Pokemon, but I don't want the whole world to know that.
And in high school, I wouldn't have worn any remotely geeky shirt. But now, I can go outside and not even realize that I'm wearing my Pokemon shirt. And when I do realize, I usually think, huh, that's embarrassing. Ah, I'm the odd ones out, who cares? When my parents were my age, they already had a child. And here I am, wearing a Pokemon shirt. You know how different states in America will have different names for certain things? Like some states call it pop instead of soda, or how they call it a washroom instead of a bathroom, and apparently in Rhode Island they call a water fountain a bubbler, and everywhere else is just normal. Anyway, once I heard that down south, there's a phrase for when it's raining and the sun is still out. And that phrase is, the devil meeting his wife. Oh, isn't that so sweet? That means anyone can find happiness, even the devil. I love it when we give the devil more innocent and human characteristics. And given how few of times it rains in Arizona, I don't get to use that phrase very often. So already when it's raining, it's like, woo, it's raining, this day is going to be great. But then when the sun's out, I get to say, look guys, the devil's meeting his wife. I hope they're happy together. Unfortunately, I misheard what that phrase was when I learned it. It's not the devil meeting his wife. It's actually the devil beating his wife. So I guess they're not happy together. I was so sad when I learned what it actually was. I don't know who this devil's wife is, but you need to find a new man, dude. And to think, I almost thought of you as an alright guy, Satan. I looked up that saying on Wikipedia, and in Tennessee they say, the devil is kissing his wife. So I guess in Tennessee, the devil's romantic, but everywhere else he just can't stand her. And the worst variation I could find has to be what they say in France. In France, when it rains and the sun's out, they say, the devil is beating his wife and marrying his daughter. Whoa, France! I'd expect that sort of behavior from Tennessee, but not you, France. Why do you have to be so dramatic to describe your weather? I don't want to even know what you call snowstorms. So anyway, those were my random thoughts. I swear I don't do drugs. I like to think that my videos, for the most part, have greatly improved in quality from the past year. Let's watch a clip of my first video. Roll the clip.
Do you know those books you make in elementary school that you write as a class and some publishing company makes them into a real book?
So you know those books you make in elementary school?
Man, I don't think I could sound less insecure. And I was 18 when I made that video. I was legally old enough to get married. So I'm always trying to improve the quality of my videos. I've gotten a better microphone, I've learned to level out my audio, I like to think my drawings are more lively and move more, but sometimes when I record, I tend to smack my lips. And I always thought it was because my mouth was dry. So then I would chug an entire water bottle, but I would still sometimes have smacky lips. So I thought, is it possible I could be drinking too much water? Is that even a thing? Maybe I should drink Gatorade. So no big deal, right? First I Google, how to stop lip smacking. And since I couldn't find anything that had pictures...
How can you read this? There's no pictures.
I decided to ask YouTube instead. I don't know, maybe someone out there makes voice acting tutorials. But instead, I stumbled upon something indescribable.
Tonight.
So there was this about 14-year-old girl just getting
real close to the microphone and smacking her lips.
And apparently there's a lot higher demand for people who smack their lips than people who don't. Jeez, I don't even know why I tried to fix that problem. But you're probably thinking, James, this is just one video, right? This is just one person making a YouTube video, right? There's not like an entire community dedicated to...
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR. This is the entire Wikipedia page printed out with notes. You know, I bet at least some people watching this already know what it is. And you didn't tell me about it. What, you think I wasn't going to find out?
And my college charges 5 cents to print a page. So I spent 65 cents printing out this Wikipedia article. Money I'm never getting back. So what is ASMR? Basically, it's a video of someone whispering into a microphone and making certain sounds. For about 20 to 60 minutes. Now you might be thinking, why? Why do they do this? The Wikipedia article says that the purpose of ASMR is to give listeners sort of a tingly sensation in the head, and some people describe it as akin to a mild electric current. The best way I can think to describe it is,
You know those Bob Ross videos? Remember how you just loved to watch them even though you couldn't paint? Why did you watch them? Yeah, you watched them because you loved his soft, gentle voice and the sounds of the paintbrush on the canvas. And then when he'd beat his paintbrush on that little thing, you could beat me, Bobby. I think that's what ASMR is trying to create. It's basically supposed to give you the same feeling when you watch a Bob Ross video.
Man, you're watching those videos a lot differently than me.
Now, since I read the Wikipedia page, let me tell you some useless facts about it. The first case of ASMR was in a book written in 1925 that said, "With a roughness in her voice like a grasshopper, which rasps his spine deliciously and sent running up into his brain waves of sound." The frick? In this part about evolutionary history, David Hurin states that the ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic... Babe, what is this word? Altruistic? The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic attention, and has strong similarities to physical grooming in primates, who derive enormous pleasure, borderlining on euphoria, when being groomed by a grooming partner. Not to get clean, but rather to bond with each other. So that begs the question, do dogs like it? ASMR was officially created in 2008, but it didn't get popular until a Facebook group, along with a subreddit, was created in 2010. Now, it wasn't always called ASMR. Instead, people used phrases like brain massage, head tingle, brain tingle, spine tingle, and my personal favorite, attention-induced head orgasm. What are you doing with those grasshoppers, ma'am? But a lot of people didn't want to use orgasm in the name, because then people would think that this ASMR stuff is pretty sexual, which it totally isn't, you guys, except in 2015 when people started making a new genre of ASMR videos called ASMR Otica. And something else that's worth noting on the Wikipedia page, the popularity of ASMR videos featuring women does substantially exceed those created by male performers. However, there are some popular male ASMRists, and not all video creators are heterosexual. So can I not make ASMR videos? Is that what it's saying? So the creator of the Facebook group back in 2010 coined the term autonomous sensory meridian response. Autonomous meaning that it's spontaneous, sensory meaning the senses or sensation, and meridian meaning orgasm. I'm not making that up. Now, the word meridian doesn't mean orgasm at all. But in the Wikipedia article, it says, Alan chose the word meridian, mistakenly believing that it was a kinder way of saying orgasmic. Look, it's even on our blog. So you're telling me this whole time people have been using ASMR to mean climax, and that's not even what it means. Okay, some other things in the Wikipedia article I want to talk about is that apparently not everyone experiences ASMR. There's also a type of ASMR called binaural recording, where performers use two microphones and place them where your ears would be. So it's extra creepy. Look, I'm lip smacking right now. Another popular theme is that these videos do a lot of role-playing, specifically clinical role-playing. Now, I'm someone who never really got into the whole role-playing experience, except when Captain Sparkles does it. Come on, where's part five? Let's read the wiki! The ASMRists provide clinical or medical services, including routine general medical examinations. The creator of these videos make no claims to the reality of what is depicted, and the viewer is intended to be aware that they are watching and listening to a simulation, performed by an actor. Yeah, I don't think we can really use the word actor, Wikipedia. Okay, what else? There's little scientific work done on it. Some people say that it's great for fighting insomnia and anxiety, but others say, no, it's not. But I mean, it's not like it's bad for you. And there has been one song made to trigger ASMR, but I listened to it. I don't think song is the best word for it. It's more just normal ASMR audio. Just because it was released on an album doesn't make it a song, Wikipedia. And there's one comment on this video that I think sums up ASMR pretty well. I'm extremely uncomfortable. I had no idea that ASMR was even a thing. Did you know it was a thing? I didn't. Heck, even College Humor made a parody ASMR video. I just want to make things clear. I'm not hating on people who make ASMR videos or even people who like to watch it. And I'm certainly not jealous that some of these people have hundreds of thousands of subscribers and millions of views and all they're doing is just brushing a microphone for 20 minutes. But guys, I think this ASMR thing is getting a little out of hand. Keep in mind that all these videos are about 15 minutes to an hour long. We have this girl with a southern accent singing I'm Blue and Numa Numa to remove a curse from you. Numa, Numa, Inaudible whispering and tongue clicking, a couple of dentist roleplays, a library book return roleplay, eating Chinese food, a couple of Yu-Gi-Oh card readings, a Minecraft Let's Play, a Five Nights at Freddy's tribute, Undertale, a Mario Maker Let's Play, Evening with the Vampire, the Joker, Satan, Alien Abduction for Men, and torture roleplay. Really? You could type ASMR and then type anything after that and you'll get something.
Do you think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created?
And what's doubly weird is that all of these videos are recent. Like, they were made in 2015 or even 2016. Well, obviously Undertale and Mario Maker are recent. But Shrek? Shrek? But just to finish things up, I just want to get something off my chest. This Undertale ASMR was pretty good. Compared to the other ones. You still might be thinking, yeah, it's pretty weird, James. Yeah, it is pretty weird. We've gotten pretty deep in the weirdness with those alien ones. And they have almost 1 million views. I just think this one deserves more views. You know, I just want one ASMR video to be like 40 minutes long, and then in the middle somewhere, the person just screams. Like, really hardcore screams. Yeah.
James!
Hey, Dad, I kind of have a weird request.
Okay.
Can you film the dogs with headphones in them and then send me the video?
You mean dogs wearing earbuds?
Yeah. Make sure to film it horizontally.
I don't think they won't keep earbuds in their ears.
Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this... a naturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things! Treat others how you want to be treated, mate!
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we? No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my field. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time. Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show.
Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood.
In my teen years and watching full episodes of Bluey.
Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude.
Huh. You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Coco Melon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day, I sat down, put on the first episode, and...
I watched all 141 episodes.
Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus! Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan. We're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds. So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular.
because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing, so it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Cocomelon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4-year-old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals. They call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Oh, nor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen ever. There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is like, the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out. Bingo was sad that Dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
"Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly."
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her. Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed, one of them said, "You didn't get to see the ladybug," I would say, "That's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night." In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, "Well, where was the last place you had it?" The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backward storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into the show, and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer, because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, this show teaches you how to be a good parent, because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, this show is depicting perfect parents, it's well written and wholesome, anyone regardless of having kids can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the fuck was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great." I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode. People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No! That episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Cocomelon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say, you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen! I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatback. The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Chili set out to build a new swing for their porch, and we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying, I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog. Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents. Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs. What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on. The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww, we made them. The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older, as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold, which represents her death, and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing, and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end, saying, "Ah, this is heaven. Are you joshing me right now?" This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kid show with 8-minute long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. It's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks. His brattiness isn't even important to the plot. It comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, "Gilbert, look what you did." He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to go away. And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of s***. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching,
piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punks sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, "Caillou, what did you do to your sister?" "I made her look pretty, Mommy." "Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup. How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things? Come here, you little twit."
Mommy,
he's getting a spanking.
Mommy, you're right.
I've had enough of you, Caillou. I hate you.
That kid got what was coming to him.
I don't know, maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping, Bandit getting hit in the groin, Bandit saying the word groin, this hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina, that one's kinda weird, this pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains, Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there. Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney Plus. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode, I heard so much about it, I finally got to the last episode on Disney Plus and thought, oh, okay, they're saving the deepest one for last. Alright, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance. I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it? Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts.
You know, I never really understood trigger words until I got roommates. I hated my roommates. Except for you, Isaac. He watches my videos. Oh, James, you didn't hate your roommates. You just mildly disliked them. Yes, I did. When I first moved out of my house and went to college, the day I moved into my apartment and I opened the front door, this is what I saw. Keep in mind all the buildup that has gone into this moment. First, I had to get accepted into the school, then pick my major and classes. Then I had to find an apartment close to the school and get everything set up there. Then I had to pack everything up into a suitcase, kiss my dogs goodbye, and then be all on my own for the very first time. I opened the door to where I'd be living for the next 8 months, and this is what I see. Someone sleeping on a couch, he was wearing some bright fast food employee uniform, the TV is on, there's a Halo 5 poster hanging on the wall, the sink, counter, and table is full of dirty dishes, there's a big industrial-sized trash can that is overflowing, inside the fridge there is an empty box of Dr. Pepper, a bottle of ketchup, and a jumbo Costco-sized pack of hot dogs. Where did all these dishes come from? Fun fact, those hot dogs were still in the fridge when I left. But the worst thing that was there was about a million basketball cards just lying on the floor. I'm not even exaggerating, here's proof. Okay, so I got a single room because I brought all my drawing stuff, and I would feel bad if I shared a room with someone and he had to deal with all my drawing stuff being there, and also I wanted to be alone. Looking back, I'm so glad I got a single room because that room couldn't even fit myself. Literally, I could stand in the middle of the room, hold my hands out, and without moving my feet, I could touch the walls of the room. Maybe I just have long arms, I don't know. I mean, I could settle for a small bedroom, but what made living there so horrible were the roommates. What I didn't realize is that these boys also got private rooms, so that means that they too were socially awkward and kept to themselves, which you might think is a good thing, but you'd be wrong. On the first night of being by myself, I unpack all my drawing stuff and I set it all up. Then I turn on the computer and the screen is just black. Nothing was turning on. I tried everything to fix it and it just wasn't turning on. Eventually, I contacted the people who made it, sent it in, and then I got it back working. But during that week while the tablet was being fixed, like, seriously, no joke, that was probably the worst week of my entire life. I'm being serious, making comics and YouTube videos was what kept me sane. And that first night of being on my own and my tablet broke, I cried, guys. I couldn't even eat food, I was that sad. I hit rock bottom. I remember just watching Captain Sparkles and Game Grumps highlights all day. But then, the day I got it back, I was a drawing machine. I posted a comic the very same day. So let's spend the rest of this video talking about these previously mentioned roommates I had. The first person I need to talk about is Isaac. He was the only one that I like, and he's also the only one I told that I made YouTube videos. Now, this boy wore Obey hats, he vaped, and he said stuff like, "That's dope." But you wanna know why I liked him the most? Because he did the dishes! Like, me and him did the dishes. It wasn't just him, okay? I'd probably never become friends with him in any other circumstance. Just wanted to say that he was the cool one. I like him. Hi, Isaac. I miss you. I was looking at this post on the internet, and it was where the old memes are today. And for the after picture for the Scumbag Steve meme, it looked exactly like my roommate, who I'll just make up a fake name for, Steve for convenience. I'm pretty sure I was roommates with a meme. Just put a fedora on this meme, and boom, that's my roommate, Steve. And it was a very fitting meme, too. This guy wouldn't do the dishes, he always cooked this ramen thing in the microwave, and would leave this gross juice stuff behind, so then when I would go to use the microwave, it would get my paper plates soggy, so I would have to check every time before I used it to make sure there was no juice stuff behind. And also at night he watched anime, without headphones, subbed. Anime has a certain sound to it, I don't know if you knew that. It's like normal Japanese, but really, emphatically. Luckily, it was usually late at night when he started watching, so I would just have to get to sleep before he started and I would be all good. James, why didn't you just ask him to turn it down? I did! One night I went into his room and I said, "Hey man, can you turn it down?" And you know what? He did turn it down for that night. That night. That one night. The very next night. But you know, he wasn't too bad. He would spend most of his time in his room playing video games, and I would spend most of my time in my room drawing. So except for the microwave juice thing, we didn't get in each other's way too often. Here's actually a funny story. So when I was filming the part in the vegan video when I crumbled up Oreos over Reese's Puffs, Steve walked into the kitchen and he saw me filming this sugary vegan concoction, and I just said to him, "Don't ask." Okay, so here's the roommate that I hated the most. His fake name will be Hunter. He was the one asleep on the couch when I first walked in, and he was the one who had collected all those billions of basketball cards. Just basketball cards. And he kept them all in the front room. What's the point of having sports cards when you can't even play with them? I mean, I spend money on Magic the Gathering cards, but that's because it's an actual game that you can play with friends. What do you do with sports cards? I mean, I guess you can leave them in the front room of your apartment. Maybe one day your roommate might make a video about it, though. He left his Mountain Dew bottles on the floor, he farted in public, he'd always complain that Steve didn't do the dishes, but he wouldn't do the dishes either. One time I was tired of doing everyone's dirty dishes, so I bought a big stack of paper plates for everyone to use, but Hunter took the paper plates to a party without even asking me, and he didn't even bring them back. But the worst thing this guy did, one day he told me, "My ex-girlfriend doesn't want our dog anymore, so he's coming to live here." What? So this boy wants to bring a dog in an already very small cramped apartment. I couldn't believe this. The dog's name was Snoopy and I loved him. Hunter would put him in his kennel at night, but one night I was like, "Hey Hunter, Snoopy can stay with me if you want." And then boom, from that day forth, I was the one taking care of Snoopy. Snoopy would now sleep in my room, I would be the one who took him out for walks, and I fed him slices of lunch meat. What was great was that when I would go into the kitchen and Hunter would be watching TV, he would call for Snoopy. "Snoopy! Snoops! Snoops!" But he wouldn't come. This dog would follow me everywhere. And then one day Hunter said, "Hey, do you just want to have Snoopy? I was going to get rid of him." And then I said I would take him. And then later that same week, Hunter moved out. He took all the toilet paper, too. He basically gave me a dog. And of course, I loved that dog. But we lived in such a small space, and I was always busy with school and drawing. I knew these weren't the best conditions for a dog to live in, and I'm pretty sure my apartment didn't even allow pets. So I asked people I knew if they wanted Snoopy, and my grandma got one of her friends to take care of him. So I dropped Snoopy off, and I've never seen him since. And that's it, the end. You know, I never really understood trigger words until I got... roommates. I hated my roommates. Except for you, Isaac. He watches my videos. Oh, James, you didn't hate your roommates. You just mildly disliked them. Yes, I did. When I first moved out of my house and went to college, the day I moved into my apartment and I opened the front door, this is what I saw. Keep in mind all the buildup that has gone into this moment. First, I had to get accepted into the school, then pick my major and classes. Then I had to find an apartment close to the school and get everything set up there. Then I had to pack everything up into a suitcase, kiss my dogs goodbye, and then be all on my own for the very first time. I opened the door to where I'd be living for the next 8 months, and this is what I see. Someone sleeping on a couch, he was wearing some bright fast food employee uniform, the TV is on, there's a Halo 5 poster hanging on the wall, the sink, counter, and table is full of dirty dishes, there's a big industrial-sized trash can that is overflowing, inside the fridge there is an empty box of Dr. Pepper, a bottle of ketchup, and a jumbo Costco-sized pack of hot dogs. Where did all these dishes come from? Fun fact, those hot dogs were still in the fridge when I left. But the worst thing that was there was about a million basketball cards just lying on the floor. I'm not even exaggerating, here's proof. Okay, so I got a single room because I brought all my drawing stuff, and I would feel bad if I shared a room with someone and he had to deal with all my drawing stuff being there, and also I wanted to be alone. Looking back, I'm so glad I got a single room because that room couldn't even fit myself. Literally, I could stand in the middle of the room, hold my hands out, and without moving my feet, I could touch the walls of the room. Maybe I just have long arms, I don't know. I mean, I could settle for a small bedroom. But what made living there so horrible were the roommates. What I didn't realize is that these boys also got private rooms. So that means that they too were socially awkward and kept to themselves. Which you might think is a good thing, but you'd be wrong. On the first night of being by myself, I unpack all my drawing stuff and I set it all up. Then I turn on the computer and the screen is just black. Nothing was turning on. I tried everything to fix it and it just wasn't turning on. Eventually, I contacted the people who made it, sent it in, and then I got it back working. But during that week while the tablet was being fixed... like, seriously, no joke, that was probably the worst week of my entire life. I'm being serious, making comics and YouTube videos was what kept me sane. And that first night of being on my own and my tablet broke, I cried, guys. I couldn't even eat food, I was that sad. I hit rock bottom. I remember just watching Captain Sparkles and Game Grumps highlights all day. But then, the day I got it back, I was a drawing machine. I posted a comic the very same day. So let's spend the rest of this video talking about these previously mentioned roommates I had. The first person I need to talk about is Isaac. He was the only one that I like, and he's also the only one I told that I made YouTube videos. Now, this boy wore Obey hats, he vaped, and he said stuff like, "That's dope." But you wanna know why I liked him the most? Because he did the dishes! Like, me and him did the dishes. It wasn't just him, okay? I'd probably never become friends with him in any other circumstance. Just wanted to say that he was the cool one. I like him. Hi, Isaac. I miss you. I was looking at this post on the internet, and it was where the old memes are today. And for the after picture for the Scumbag Steve meme, it looked exactly like my roommate, who I'll just make up a fake name for, Steve for convenience. I'm pretty sure I was roommates with a meme. Just put a fedora on this meme, and boom, that's my roommate, Steve. And it was a very fitting meme, too. This guy wouldn't do the dishes, he always cooked this ramen thing in the microwave, and would leave this gross juice stuff behind. So then when I would go to use the microwave, it would get my paper plates soggy. So I would have to check every time before I used it to make sure there was no juice stuff behind. And also at night he watched anime. Without headphones? Subbed? Anime has a certain sound to it, I don't know if you knew that. It's like normal Japanese, but really, emphatically. Luckily, it was usually late at night when he started watching, so I would just have to get to sleep before he started and I would be all good. James, why didn't you just ask him to turn it down? I did! One night, I went into his room and I said, "Hey man, can you turn it down?" And you know what? He did turn it down for that night. That night. That one night. The very next night... But you know, he wasn't too bad. He would spend most of his time in his room playing video games, and I would spend most of my time in my room drawing. So except for the microwave juice thing, we didn't get in each other's way too often. Here's actually a funny story. So when I was filming the part in the vegan video when I crumpled up Oreos over Reese's Puffs, Steve walked into the kitchen and he saw me filming this sugary vegan concoction, and I just said to him, "Don't ask." Okay, so here's the roommate that I hated the most. His fake name will be Hunter. He was the one asleep on the couch when I first walked in, and he was the one who had collected all those billions of basketball cards. Just basketball cards. And he kept them all in the front room. What's the point of having sports cards when you can't even play with them? I mean, I spend money on Magic the Gathering cards, but that's because it's an actual game that you can play with friends. What do you do with sports cards? I mean, I guess you can leave them in the front room of your apartment. Maybe one day your roommate might make a video about it, though. He left his Mountain Dew bottles on the floor. He farted in public. He'd always complain that Steve didn't do the dishes, but he wouldn't do the dishes either. One time I was tired of doing everyone's dirty dishes, so I bought a big stack of paper plates for everyone to use. But Hunter took the paper plates to a party without even asking me, and he didn't even bring them back. But the worst thing this guy did, one day he told me, my ex-girlfriend doesn't want our dog anymore, so he's coming to live here. What? So this boy wants to bring a dog in an already very small cramped apartment. I couldn't believe this. The dog's name was Snoopy and I loved him. Hunter would put him in his kennel at night, but one night I was like, hey, Hunter, Snoopy can stay with me if you want. And then boom, from that day forth, I was the one taking care of Snoopy. Snoopy would now sleep in my room. I would be the one who took him out for walks, and I fed him slices of lunch meat. What was great was that when I would go into the kitchen and Hunter would be watching TV, he would call for Snoopy. Snoopy! Snoops! Snoops! But he wouldn't come. This dog would follow me everywhere. And then one day Hunter said, hey, do you just want to have Snoopy? I was going to get rid of him. And then I said I would take him. And then later that same week, Hunter moved out. He took all the toilet paper too. He basically gave me a dog. And of course I loved that dog. But we lived in such a small space and I was always busy with school and drawing. I knew these weren't the best conditions for a dog to live in. And I'm pretty sure my apartment didn't even allow pets. So I asked people I knew if they wanted Snoopy. And my grandma got one of her friends to take care of him. So I dropped Snoopy off and I've never seen him since. And that's it, the end.
Here's a little social interaction life hack I've discovered. If you're meeting someone new and you want to get to know them better, and you see any semblance of a tattoo peeking out of their sleeve, compliment it. If that person doesn't want to talk about their tattoos, they'll say, oh, thank you. Anyway, this is my stop. But if they do want to talk about their tattoos, their face will light up, and then they'll do the rest of the talking. I realize that by giving you this advice, now anytime I compliment someone else's tattoos, it will seem disingenuous, but it's not, most of the time. I love all of your tattoos. That's right, I'm talking to you. I love your tattoos, dude. Whether it's how you got the tattoo, the meaning behind the tattoo, or being a tattoo of something you like, every tattoo is a story. And most people love telling stories about themselves. I wouldn't know anything about that, personally. I never understood why some people liked talking about their tattoos until I got one of my own. What, you think I'm going to make a whole video about tattoos when I didn't even have any? That's right. I'm a marked man, Mom. What are you going to do about it? Stop unconditionally loving me? Yeah, right. Wait, what are you doing with that cheese grater? Okay, but in all seriousness, can you make sure Grandma doesn't see this video, Mom? I don't want to upset her on the way out. Back in the day, tattoos used to be a symbol of rebellion and meant you couldn't get a job. No regrets, baby! But I feel like tattoos are getting more and more accepted, if not expected. I'll see a jacked, bald guy covered in tattoos and think, okay, yeah, he was meant to look like that. For me, the idea of being a badass tattooed guy with a sketch pad and a beanie and ripped jeans and a beaded bracelet always seemed cool to me. But like most people, when it came to tattoos, I had reservations. Ooh, this is gonna be on my body forever? What if I hate it? I had an idea once of getting these 5 Magic the Gathering symbols tattooed on my forearm. I even dotted them out in Sharpie once just to give them a test drive. But I ultimately decided not to get them because I was worried in 5 years I would go, oh, these? I was really into Magic the Gathering in my 20s. Not anymore, though, so now every morning I wake up with impending feelings of shame and remorse that I even decided to get this thing. And I didn't want that to happen, even though I've been playing Magic for over 15 years, and it means a lot to me, and I'm going to be buried with my Sliver deck, and alright, maybe I should just get it. Even though people know that tattoos are permanent, there are still way more bad tattoos than there should be. One time, I saw this picture of someone's tattoo on a bad tattoo subreddit, and I thought it'd be funny to prank my family group chat by photoshopping that tattoo onto my arm. And then I thought it'd be funny to post that picture onto Instagram. I didn't think anyone would fall for this poor excuse of a Photoshop job, but then the internet and my family proved me wrong.
Immediately, I started getting phone calls from my parents, and even my book agent rang me up and was like, "Did you actually get that tattoo?" "No, it's not a real tattoo. I mean, it is a real tattoo, but it's on someone else's body. That's their cross to bear." I can only imagine what that person's family and book agent went through. My parents were not supportive of me getting tattoos. But whose are, am I right? Some people, like my parents, say that your body is like a temple, and getting tattoos is like putting graffiti on it. Which, sure, okay, that's why I paid a professional graffiti artist to paint my temple exactly how I wanted. Also, you can't tell me not to deform my body when that's exactly what you did before I was even 24 hours old. Also, Jesus had piercings, and he loved showing them off to his buddies, so I think he'd be chill with a little tattoo. After much thought and deliberation, I finally settled on what my first tattoo would be. This was going to be permanently inked onto my body for the rest of my life. I got a tattoo in Courier New. Luckily, the artist was able to finish this in one session. It took quite a while, almost 5 whole minutes. Now let me explain why I got it. It was so that if anyone ever asked me, "Do you have any tattoos?" I could go, "Why, yes, I do." And then roll up my sleeve, and then I'd go, "Ha, ha, ha." When I showed off my tattoo on Jaden's Streamathon, there was one comment that said, "James having tattoo actually tattooed onto him is exactly the kind of tattoo I expected James to have." And that made me feel really good, because that meant the tattoo fit my vibe. And the second reason I got the tattoo was because I wanted to rebel. Since tattoos were frowned upon growing up, I wanted to have one just to have one. So I got a tattoo with no meaning whatsoever. Which, in a way, is the meaning. Even though the tattoo was small and usually covered up by my sleeve, I still felt anxious about getting it. And I continued to feel that way for about a week after I got it. It was a jump scare every time I saw it in the mirror, and I would look at it closely and go, "Yep, that's really in there. I sure hope I don't regret this." But then, after some time, the tattoo just became a part of me. Like, I didn't look in the mirror and go, "Yep, there's James and tattoo." I would go, "Yep, there's James." Full stop. And from that day on, I loved giving people advice on tattoos. As a marked man myself, I think you should absolutely get that Shadow the Hedgehog full back piece. YOLO, remember? What? You're worried that it's going to look bad when you're 70? Yeah, it's going to look bad when you're 70. You're 70. Don't think about how bad it's going to look. Think about how much you're going to enjoy it from now to when you're 69. I've known people my age who still hide their tattoos from their parents, but like the honest prodigal son that I am, I wasn't going to be doing that. But the next time I visited my parents, I walked into their house, and the very first thing my mom said to me was, "Do you have any tattoos?" She beat me to the punch. What? Why would you ask that? Because last night, I had a dream that you came home and were covered in tattoos. So, which one of you incepted my mom? God? I said, "Are all tattoos bad?" "Yes, all of them are bad. Even this one." And I rolled up my sleeve and revealed my massive tat. And her reaction was, "Ah. Oh. Well, it's not the worst word to have permanently inked on your body." Later on, she said, "If you go to a Star Wars party, you could change it to Tatooine." So, I think she took it pretty goodly. Now, some of you might be thinking that my epic sleeve of a tattoo isn't that big a deal. It's tiny and can only be seen if I'm swimming or boxing or wearing a tank top. But you see, after getting tattooed, I experienced what people in the tattooing business call catching the bug. After seeing how much I liked my first tattoo and knowing that I could handle having a tattoo, I was ready to get something badass. I set up a big boy tattoo appointment with an artist I liked, and when I was in the tattoo shop, the artist asked, "Is this your first tattoo?" "Is this my first tattoo?" No, sweetheart. I think I know a thing or two about tattoos. So, without further ado, I would like to debut this out of the blue tattoo.
Mmm, you know, from the Dark Crystal, the Jim Henson 80s puppet movie that I did a video on it years ago. Now I have the best character permanently inked onto my skin forever and ever. That movie will always hold a special place in my heart, and now it'll hold a special place under my skin. And now, whenever I show someone the Chamberlain, we end up talking about the Dark Crystal, which is great, because that's what I wanted to talk about anyways. I think I just discovered an autistic conversational cheat code. When I was getting it done, the artist asked me if there were any other tattoos that I wanted to get, and I said, why, yes I do. I wanted to get the computer from Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, because I also love that series, and because I'm a computery guy. And I didn't realize until as I was explaining it to the artist that both of these characters are puppets. So, I don't know what that says about my psyche. I never thought that I liked puppets that much, but if anyone wants to psychoanalyze me in the comments, that'd be great. And speaking of YouTube comments, I know a lot of people are going to bring this up, so I'm just going to address it right now. You probably noticed that Chamberlain isn't holding his iconic triangle scepter. Yeah, I already know that. That's because he's holding the Emperor's scepter. It's like my own little headcanon. He got to be the Emperor because he's cool and awesome. And come on, Dark Crystal fans. You think I don't know my lore? I didn't get the wrong scepter or anything. You think I'd get something wrong about the Dark Crystal? Okay, you want to know what happened? I own a Chamberlain statue because, of course, I do. And I took pictures of it to send as a reference image to the artist. And I totally forgot that I accidentally broke off his triangle scepter. And now, because of that, he's holding an entirely different scepter on the tattoo. But you know what? I don't care. This one's better. It's a more clear silhouette. Now, this time when I went to show my parents the tattoo, I don't know exactly what I was hoping for, but I wanted to see some dramatic pearl clutching. You know, just some real disappointment. Chamberlain had to be split up into two sessions, and I only got one done when I went to Arizona for a wedding. I saw my mom, and she didn't immediately ask me if I had any more tattoos. God didn't tattle on me this time. I told her, Mom, I gotta tell you something, privately. What is it? I need you to keep a secret from Grandma. Okay. I'm serious. Grandma can't find out about this. Okay. Look, it's Chamberlain. And I showed her the unfinished tattoo, and she went, oh, do you even like the Dark Crystal that much? I mean, yeah, the plot's kind of mid, but it's a cool world. Why were you more upset about my fake Baby Yoda tattoo than my real Dark Crystal tattoo? She didn't care, and neither did my dad. And you know what? I actually showed my grandma too, and she liked it. I can't make these people mad, no matter what I do. One of my cousins is a tattoo artist, and I was talking to him about tattoos, and my mom said, oh, you should get your cousin to finish it. And even he said, do not do that. Speaking of tattoo advice, if you're thinking about getting a tattoo, I think you should wait. Obviously, it's your body, your choice, but with the minimum age of tattoos being 18, and in some states 16 with parents' permission, I just can't imagine being happy with any tattoos 16-year-old James could think of. All I'm saying is that I'm glad I waited and gave myself time to really know if this is what I wanted. And it was. I know you're young and you want to look as hardcore as possible, but you can still get a tattoo when you're like 23 and it'll look good. Trust me. No matter what tattoo you get, it's a way to express outwardly to the world what you like, what you want to remember, and who you are. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm about to get a full back piece of my grandma's face. There's literally no way my family wouldn't love that. Thank you all for watching this YouTube video, and now that you're all done, I'm excited to announce that I have a Funko Pop of me! If that's something you're interested in, then you can head on over to my website and you can get a signed Funko while supplies last. As always, thank you to my amazing team, and the next time I'll see you, I might have more tattoos, who knows.
Science fair. I was talking to a friend saying, oh, I know, I can do a video about the science fair, and, you know, talk about how much it sucks. And she said, oh, at my school, we didn't do the science fair.
What?
That got me wondering, did other people not do the science fair? So I did my own science experiment on Twitter. I ran a poll and asked you guys if you even did the science fair and whether or not you enjoyed doing it. And 58% of you said you didn't have to do the science fair. Like, that was way more than I expected. That's the majority. I've renamed this group of people the lucky ones.
And when I asked if you enjoyed doing it, 21% of you said you did enjoy it, and 21% of you said you didn't. I know Twitter polls aren't the most accurate sources of data, but I think it's safe to say that this is a pretty split issue. Now, I'm in the 21% of people who didn't enjoy the science fair. And don't get me wrong, I love science. Well, okay, that might not be true. I really hated biology and chemistry. That was just a mess. But physics? Physics was okay. Maybe I don't like science. I just like space and watching these. Bill and Neil, they're my buddies. Except Neil did hurt my feelings one time. We'll get back to that later. Alright, so let me briefly go over what the science fair is for you lucky ones who didn't have to deal with that. Apparently, it's a very American thing, right, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we started doing them, I want to say, around 4th grade, and we would do this every year up until the 10th grade. The whole class would spend all day researching a topic that interests them, and then we would have to come up with a question that we could run an experiment on. An example of these questions are, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? What color light produces the most heat? How does the shape of a rocket's fins affect its travel? All of which are projects I did. Basically, this was supposed to teach you about the scientific method, but what it really did was teach us how to procrastinate and make up data. And on paper, you might think, oh, that sounds like fun. I wish my school did the science fair. No! Here are some flaws with the science fair. First, you got the option to work with a partner. And of course, you want to work with a partner so you can split up the work and not do as much. Now, since I didn't have any friends, I would partner up with someone that no one else wanted to partner up with. But they wouldn't do any of the work. I only did the science fair with a partner once. From 5th grade on, I did my science fair projects alone. The second problem is that we had to come up with a question all on our own. And you gotta understand, we were just kids. We don't think as cognitively as scientists do, okay? Just a couple years ago, we still believed in Santa Claus. Except for me, my family didn't do Santa Claus. And now you want us to wonder if the ratio of a cylinder will affect its buoyancy? Like, come on. And also, we don't have access to any resources. You know, the science fair is a lot like an episode of Mythbusters. But what sets apart the Mythbusters from your average 4th grader is that they're really smart engineers who have access to explosives, while we can't even drive to Walmart ourselves. We have to ask our parents to take us. One year, I wanted to do an experiment on a certain type of soil, so I did research, I wrote everything all up, but then when I went to Home Depot to buy the soil, they didn't even have it! So I had to pick a new topic and start all over again. Now do you see why I think the science fair sucks? So okay, I think it would have been better in elementary school if we were assigned a question. I know the whole point of these things is about discovery, but we're all stupid, okay? I guess if you're anything like me and you chose a crappy question, you'll have a bad science fair. My very first science fair, after all day researching possible questions, me and my partner came up with a question, what time of the day is the hottest? Now, I already know the answer to this question, and in 4th grade, I'm sure I already knew the answer to this question, too. It's noon. Like, I don't need to run an experiment on that. In fact, I can just go to Google and seriously just type weather and boom, there's my data right there. No need for an experiment. But the science fair isn't just finding the answer to your question. No. First, after you research the topic, you have to write a hypothesis. A hypothesis is basically you guessing what you think the result of the experiment will be, but you don't write it down as I think this will happen. No, you write it like you know what's gonna happen. A formula. Formula, science. For a perfect hypothesis is, if blank, then blank, because blank. Let's use my battery experiment. I said, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? So after doing research about how batteries work, a hypothesis for this experiment would be, if two AA batteries are used at different temperatures, then the battery in the hot temperature will not last as long because the battery's fluid will evaporate, which damages the internal structure of the battery. Oh, and spoiler alert, no, it doesn't. I put two batteries outside, two in the freezer, I let them sit, and then I plugged them into my Game Boy Advance, and they lasted the exact same amount of time. I learned nothing. So you also have to write up the materials you use for the experiment, then you have to write up the steps to do the experiment, the procedures, and you also have to write an introduction, basically just bullcrapping what you're going to do. Then you do the experiment, aka the fun part. Make sure you write down your results because you have to make a graph. You have to. How do you make a graph to show that batteries at different temperatures lasted the same amount of time? They did. You think you're done, right? But no, you gotta write up the results as if your graph didn't already perfectly depict that, and a conclusion. The conclusion is like the most insulting part of the science fair. You basically go through this checklist of questions that you answer. Was your hypothesis correct? No, my hypothesis was not correct. What mistakes could you have made in your experiment? I don't know, maybe I took the batteries out of the cold and hot and put them in a room temperature Game Boy and in a couple of minutes they both went to a room temperature. I don't know. How can others use this information you found? What do you mean? All the batteries lasted the same. I don't think anyone is going to put their batteries in their freezer to have literally no effect. Alright, and then you take everything you wrote, print it out, and then slap it onto a poster board. And everyone, and I mean everyone, would use construction paper as a border around the text to give the poster board a good aesthetic. I think the second most fun part of the science fair was choosing what word art font you would use for your title. Oh, and by the way, the teachers told us to have a creative title to catch people's attention. Like, that was part of the assignment. We got graded on the title. Basically, they were telling us to create puns. For a grade, if you're doing a project that's measuring plant growth, Ready, Set, Grow, that was a very popular choice. And then everyone took their poster boards and presented it in front of the whole class. Those were the three most boring days of science ever, except for the day you presented. That was the most stressful day. And then after all that, everyone in the school put their poster board up in the cafeteria, and, you know, then it was fun to walk around and see how other people decorated their poster board, and you could always tell whose mom helped them. So, overall, I didn't have a good time. Those 21% of people who did enjoy it, I'm glad you liked it. But me and the other 21% of people think you're huge nerds. And when I asked that Twitter question, I had some people messaging me saying, yeah, I got third place and all I had was a cup of dirt, ha 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 ha. And that made me wonder, wait, it was a competition? So I think the key to a good science fair is to come up with a good question and also do a topic that you actually enjoy. One science fair, I did an experiment on rockets and I had a blast. That would have been a good title. But for another year, I did What Color Light Is the Hottest? I just shined a lamp at a thermometer and switched out the bulbs. I know I'll let Neil say what he thinks about that whole project.
Okay, red light is warmer than blue light. Interesting discovery, but not exactly revolutionary.
Thanks, Neil. Yeah, just completely discredit all my research. I'm fine. So, moral of the story, if you need an idea for a science fair project, do it on rockets. You don't even need a question. Just launch model rockets.
If you thought my family owned a lot of hamsters, wait till I tell you about all the cats we had. Just a heads up, though, some of these cats are dead. They all lived 9 happy lives. None of them had a painful death. Except for one, maybe. We don't know. We'll get into that. So cats. Some people think cats are jerks and not as loyal or loving as dogs. And they're right. But if you think about it, cats improve our lives every day. Think back to YouTube in 2006. What was popular? Cat videos. If it wasn't for cats, we wouldn't have YouTube as a platform. Which I could make the argument is another jerk thing cats did. Now, I'm a cat lover, and anyone who says they dislike cats has obviously never snuggled up with a cat and had it purr on your chest as you pet it for so long that you both fall asleep and all your anxieties melt away and the only thing you care about is your fragile feline friend. Or they're allergic. Honestly, I think I'm slightly allergic to cats as well. Because every time I snuggle up with one, my eyes get all watery, my nose gets all stuffy. But like, I can deal with that. Maybe this is what love feels like. People like to put everybody into two categories. Either you're a dog person or a cat person. But why do I have to pick just one? Can't I look at these two animals and say that both of them have good qualities that make them amazing pets? Why can't I pick both? I'm bisexual for animals. Wait. That being said, here's all the cats I had growing up. So our family had just moved to our new house, and we're all getting ready to go to church, when my older brother, who was outside for some reason instead of getting ready, heard noises coming from a bush. And when he went to investigate, he found a little baby tabby kitten. He told my parents about the cat, and they said its mom was probably looking for it, but if the cat was still there when we got back from church, then we could let it inside. And after we got back, my brother checked the bush, and the cat was still there. So we took her in, we fed her, and we decided to name her Shady after Eminem's The Real Slim Shady because she was an obnoxious cat and didn't like us at all. Yeah, but she's so cute, though. And that's how our family got our one and only cat. One cat is enough. There were no more cats. Until one night when I was sitting at the kitchen table and through the window of the back door, I saw two yellow eyes staring at me. And as a kid, I still thought monsters were real. So I pointed it out to my family. Hey, there's eyes outside. And everyone turned and was like, what the? So we opened the back door, and a piece of the night just walked into the house like it lived there or something.
Does this mean we have bad luck?
Apparently, just waltzing in our house uninvited is a very effective strategy to get adopted, because she ended up living with us for the rest of her cat life. My older sister loved Sailor Moon, and in the show, there's this black cat named Luna. Spoiler alert, Luna's actually an alien that can turn into a human sometimes, but most of the time, she's just a cat. So we named the cat after her. And little old Luna fit great in our home. We were your standard nuclear family with two cats. Just two. We never got another cat ever again. Until one day, this other cat appeared in our backyard. We put Luna's and Shady's food bowls outside, which meant our backyard was basically a cat sanctuary for any cat that could jump our fence. And sometimes we would see this calico cat hanging out in our backyard. We didn't know if she already had a home, and she would run away from us if we got close. So, we left out a third food bowl for her. And then she invited some of her siblings along because two other cats decided to chill in our backyard. And one of the cats was a boy, which meant we had to get all five cats neutered. And just like that, we more than doubled the amount of cats we had. We were feline pretty good. Three more cats added to the family, because why not? That's the perfect amount of cats if you ask me. I'm going to name them now. What? We're not getting three more cats. Two is enough. We can't just kick them out. We're going to find them a new home, but we're not keeping them.
Okay.
Also, you're not allowed to name them.
What?
If you name them, then you'll get attached to them, and we're not keeping them. So since our mom banned us from naming the cats, we called them the Calico Cat and the two other ones. And we kept calling them this until our mom found them a new home. Turns out that their new home was our home, because my mom never found them a new home. So we just left them food outside, and they were happy with that relationship. They would let you pet them, sometimes, and even sit on your lap, but if you tried to pick them up, they would hiss and bite you. They did not like being picked up, or being inside. They were feral cats. One time it was raining, so we thought it would be a good idea to bring the Calico Cat inside, but she freaked out. She hissed and scratched us. She hated being inside more than she hated the rain. And by the way, cats can be very loud. Like, as loud as dogs. They just never raise their voices. They're too proper for that. So since she didn't like being inside, we just put her back outside in the pouring rain. We ended up naming the boy cat Spot, the other cat we named Pepper, and the Calico... We didn't change her name. We named her Calico. That's like naming a dog Golden Retriever or Chihuahua. I don't know if that's sad, but you know what is sad? One day, Spot just disappeared. He stopped showing up to the house, and we never saw him again. I hope he found a good home, but who knows, you know? Maybe he went off to start a second life, or a fifth or sixth life. Get it? Because they have nine lives. Yeah, but he's probably dead. And then, I was in high school when Shady died. She had a good home with us, but it was her time to go. So we were down to three cats, and we never got another cat ever again. But then one day, my parents were out on a walk, and my mom saw a scrawny black kitten on the side of the road, and she said, "Can we keep it?" But my dad said, "No, keep walking, keep walking." And then on their way back from the walk, for some reason my dad didn't take a different route, the cat was still there, meowing at them. So my parents brought her home, and my twin sister named her Pepsi. My sister really loved Pepsi. I was more of a Coke person myself. But when my sister went off to college and I stayed home for community college, we let Pepsi outside one day, and she didn't come back. We didn't know how to tell my sister that our cat was missing, so we didn't. But we were all really worried. We put up missing posters, and after almost 2 months of being missing, she just appeared in the backyard. I don't know what happened in that two-month period. She looked fine. Maybe she got adopted by another family, and now some poor family is missing their cat, Salem. Maybe she went out looking for my sister and got lost. Maybe she started acting in some Japanese TV shows. Who knows? But we found her. We didn't even tell my sister that her cat had been missing until after we found Pepsi. So she wasn't very happy about that. Then Luna passed away. It was sad, but cats don't live forever. Sorry. Sailor Moon wasn't even a good show anyway. Now, long-time Odd Ones Out fans might know this next story. My older brother found another kitten at the gym he worked at, brought her home, and named her Azula. But the name Azula didn't stick because we found out that Azula was a dude. I was the one, by the way, who saw Azula's firebenders and told everyone. Just wanted to get that part of the story straight. So Azula's name had to change, and while this was happening, we had a French foreign exchange student living with us, and she didn't know the word for kitten, so she called him the baby cat. And then we all started calling him the baby cat, and now that's his name, baby cat. That's how he got his name, baby cat. Since we're on the topic of pets, I have something that I probably should have mentioned a while ago. For the most part, I try to keep this channel goofy and lighthearted, which is probably why I waited so long to tell you this. But around Christmas of 2017, my dog Georgie passed away. You might remember her in some of my older videos. She was 13 years old, and just like the cats, it was her time to go. Yes, it was sad, but that's what happens to pets. They become your best friend, but they're not in your life forever. So if you have pets, remember to appreciate them now. I wouldn't have changed anything about Georgie's life. She was a good dog. Sorry, that part got a little personal.
And my dog Poppy did not take Georgie's death very well, so my parents had to get an emotional support dog for their dog, and they got Jax, because he liked to jump, so he was their Jumping Jax. Aw, what a good name.
Hey, just a heads up, don't get too attached to any of the hamsters mentioned in this video, because they're all dead. And I would say that no hamsters were harmed in the making of this video. Well, I mean, no hamsters were harmed while I made this video. They're all still dead. But some hamsters, they got harmed. Just keep watching. If there's anything I've learned that the internet just loves is stupid drama and cute animals. So I'm going to talk about all the cute hamsters that I've enslaved. Our family enslaved quite a lot. It was my twin sister who really wanted a pet hamster and bugged my mom to get one. And my mom, being super nice, bought her the cage, and we bought everything else, including a little black hamster. We named him Squeaks. And he liked to do this really cute thing where he put all of his food in his hamster wheel, and it was made of plastic so he could do that. And then late at night, he would just run in it, and it would sound like... It was like a more annoying maraca. I actually made a comic on paper inspired by this hamster. Wow, you got a hamster? Yeah, but he doesn't do much. Well, yeah, this type of hamster is nocturnal. Really? That means I'll hardly notice him. And then at night, he's trying to sleep, but the hamster is loud, and that's keeping him awake. And the joke is that he said he'd hardly notice him, and he's noticing him. It's not that funny. And I need to tell you about a dog that we have named Georgie. And actually, a little fun fact about Georgie. She was born on Election Day of 2004, which is a much cooler holiday to have a birthday on. It only comes once every 4 years. It's like leap year. It's more rare. So since George W. Bush won the 2004 election, we named our dog Georgie after him. Aww. And that also means that our 12th birthday was on the 2nd. I definitely won't be able to get this video out by that time, but still.
Happy birthday to you. Yay! So Georgie can get the birthday, because it's her birthday, and Poppy can get the girl, because she's the girl. Do you like it?
I wonder if it tastes good.
Oh.
This is a huge waste of money.
Anyway, back to rodents. This dog just loved to murder these animals. Well, I don't know if murder's the right word. No, murder's the right word. You have to understand that Georgie is a West Highland Terrier, and that breed is known for hunting small animals. So having Georgie and a hamster in the same house doesn't mix well. We had this little plastic hamster ball that we put Squeaks in sometimes. The first time we put Squeaks into his plastic ball, my older brother bowled him. Like a bowling ball. PETA, don't sue me. I was vegan for a week. And Georgie thought it was a treat just for her. A treat with a hard outer shell and a juicy middle. She would go straight up rabid wolf on that hamster ball. We didn't put Squeaks inside his hamster ball anymore after that. But there's even more to say about this hamster. One day, me and my sister came home from school and Squeaks was just gone. He escaped. Everyone, get your pockets! We looked everywhere and we couldn't find him. We had to keep a close eye on Georgie at all times. My sister put up missing posters around the house. I don't know if those helped. We made these traps out of Duplo. Did anyone else's parents get them Duplo instead of Legos? No, only my parents were that lame. Alright. We built this box thing out of Duplo, and we made these stairs going up to the top of the box, and we put lettuce on each step, and the plan was that the hamster would walk up the stairs and fall in the box, because they're stupid. But the traps never worked. And all the hamsters we got in the future that also escaped, we made the same traps, and not once did they ever work. 4 days. Squeaks was missing for 4 days. We found his body inside the wall. He was alive! My dad was sitting on the couch relaxing. It was dead quiet, and he just heard the faintest... Squeaks was inside the wall! We think he got in through our laundry chute. I don't know what I would do if my kid's hamster was inside the wall of my house. Well, kids, now's an important time I teach you about death. My dad ended up cutting 3 holes in the wall and lured Squeaks out with some lettuce. Poor thing, he was probably starving. Hopefully he kept some extra food in his cheeks. So even being tormented by the dog and getting stuck in the wall for 4 days, Squeaks still lived a fulfilling 2 years of life. Hamsters don't have that long a lifespan. We buried him in the backyard. After the Squeaks dynasty, we got some more hamsters. Squeaks 2, that was the next one. We thought maybe if we introduced Squeaks 2 to Georgie, then they could be friends and get along. I'll spare you the details of what happened that night. The next one we named Killer because he kept biting us, so get it? Killer? Yeah, he ended up getting killed. Nah, I'm just kidding. He wasn't killed. He lived a long and normal hamster life. Squeaks, too, was killed, though. I don't know if you picked up on that. We bought these three little hamsters. Seriously, they're the most adorable little things. They look like this. I forgot their names. We'll just call them the Three Amigos. Aw. The lady at the pet store told us that if we bought hamsters from the same litter, they would all get along. She was obviously just trying to sell us more hamsters. Or maybe she didn't have any siblings. But these bros just hated each other. They would never stop fighting. As I was writing the script for this, I thought, well, maybe they were just aggressively playing. So I googled, do hamsters play with each other, just to be sure, and the first thing that showed up, dwarf hamsters, which is what the Three Amigos were, are quite territorial and will not see former cage mates as old friends. They see them as threatening rivals. So there we go, you really know your hamsters, lady. So we had to get three different cages for them. We put them right next to each other, and I swear they still gave each other some death glares. I actually made a video a long time ago about this time I broke one of their cages. I was cleaning it outside, and for whatever reason, I was like, huh, I wonder if I could stand on it. The answer, no, I couldn't. The glass broke and I bled everywhere, and I still have the scar on my foot. And then all the Three Amigos died off, one by one. Sorry, I'm getting really emotional. We also had this other hamster named Buddy, and I wasn't going to mention him because he just escaped and we never found him. Except as my mom was reading over the script, because she reads over my scripts, thanks mom, she turned to me and said, did we ever tell you what happened to Buddy? And I said, what do you mean? She said, you know how we couldn't find him? Well, we did, but the dog got to him first. This one time I wanted to buy a hamster, and I saw some that were on sale, and there was this piece of paper next to the cage that said, please adopt us. Oh, shoot, I'll take one of these puppies. No, not an actual puppy. I meant one of the hamsters. And I named her Pumpkin Seed, because she was that tan pumpkin seed color. But then, one month after I got her, she just died. For no reason. Even though I loved her. She had food, she had water. This wasn't the first time I was taking care of a hamster, okay? All the other ones lived for a couple of years. I was so sad. I totally got chipped. No wonder they were on sale. They were all halfway to death's door. I mean, I only had the hamster for a month. I didn't get that emotionally attached to it. But then later, I got a different hamster that I paid full price for, and I named her Gumball. Unlike all the other hamsters that were technically my sister's, this hamster was all mine. And she didn't have anything traumatic happen to her. She had a good hamster life. I was pretty sad when Gumball died. We lavished these hamsters, okay? We loved them. At least my sister did. She cried when they died and made little gravestones for them. Our mom used to always say, there's no point in being a skinny hamster. She gave them a lot of treats, so much so that it got to the point that the hamster would come out looking for my mom just by the sound of her voice. All in all, there's about 7 dead hamsters buried in our backyard. Rip in peace, little bros.
You might be thinking that me giving you advice on pitching a show is insincere or not applicable because of that. But listen, there was still a whole lot of work that went into my pitch for a TV show, and even with all my subscribers, statistically, I still got turned down way more times than I got picked up. If Netflix is just green-lighting everyone with a big sub count, then why doesn't I Did a Thing have a show, huh? Why doesn't Mr. Beast have a Netflix show? Oh, actually, he's doing just fine. By the way, if you are someone with a lot of subscribers, don't just walk into a studio and say, hey, I have a lot of subs, give me a show, okay? Walk in and say, hey, I have a lot of subs and free merchandise for you, okay? Diversification is key. Networks like Netflix, Cartoon Network, and Nickelodeon, they're in the biz of making content for their platform, and in turn getting you, the viewer, to watch said content on said platform, thus generating a perpetual money-making cycle that everyone, including you, benefits from. Now, the executives in charge don't have all the time to come up with every single show they're going to make. So, they turn to the general public, open their doors, and will listen to anyone pitch them their idea for a television series. But even if you have an Emmy-winning idea, if you're not able to properly sell your idea and win over the hearts of the network executives, it's not going to get picked up and developed. Then your only option is to independently fund and develop your idea yourself. But what kind of a loser would do that? And thus the art of pitching a show is born. You could honestly teach a whole class about this. Now, obviously, you can't just walk into a studio empty-handed. Alright, big idea. What if we do a show where there's a talking alligator, right? And he's like, yo, what? I'm a crocodile. You gotta come prepared, but also not be over-prepared. I was actually surprised to learn this, but going into the pitch room with finished scripts, turnarounds of your characters, and plushies will actually hurt your chances of getting picked up.
The reason for this is because executives will sometimes like to change parts of your show, and if you already have all the characters and story mapped out, they'll not want to pick you up because they feel like they can't change anything. You're not even supposed to write any scripts until after you get the green light, because the executives have to approve all the scripts you make and the writers that you want to hire. So if you ever pitch a show, just be open for changes. Which, I can attest, is a very different experience to what it's like on YouTube. What you do want to bring to the pitch is this super important document called a show Bible. And then you need to convert to that show's religion. The show Bible is a document that contains everything your audience needs to know about your show. In the beginning of a show Bible, there should be a 1-2 sentence description that covers the main synopsis of your show. It's kind of like an elevator pitch, but here in the biz, we call it a log line. I'll give you mine as an example. When James's parents move them to a tiny desert town where eccentric scientific minds have been brought together to do unfettered experiments, James finds himself surrounded by the children of these scientists and the offspring of their experiments. The result? Unlike in his last town, James is no longer the oddest kid around. I don't know if the show's been out by the time this video comes out, but we kind of lost the new in town theme. Like I said, the executives want to make changes. After the logline, you write a page-long backstory where you go more in-depth with your idea. Answer questions like, who are the characters? What are their goals? Where do they live? Just general stuff, because after the backstory page, you're going to write all about your characters. This is the part of the Bible where you can just go balls to the wall with details and description. Who, how, and why are your characters? What are their wants, needs, fears, flaws, likes, dislikes, and general personality traits? These are important traits to think about, even if a specific detail isn't going to be reflected in the show. Like in my Bible for the crocodile, Max, some of the things we said he liked were the rain, raw chicken, and laying on warm rocks in the sun. Now, I don't think he got to enjoy a single one of those things in the show, but these are the types of questions you have to answer to get the clearest idea of who your characters are. You should also include drawings of your characters. This can help show their personality and body language, but just keep them to doodles, because, again, be open, they can be... they're subjected to change. Next, there needs to be drawings and descriptions of specific locations that the characters spend a lot of time in. This will help show the overall world and tone of the show. And lastly, I know it's long, that's why it's called a show Bible and not a show pamphlet. You need to write out page-long episode ideas, not scripts. This will show the executives what a typical episode would look like and the direction and tone you want to go with the show. Honestly, there's so much that goes into a show Bible. I'm really only scratching the surface. If you are genuinely interested in pitching a show, or even a little interested in cartoons, then I would highly recommend looking at other show Bibles online for inspiration and how they should be formatted. It's pretty fun looking through older show Bibles and seeing the earliest versions of your favorite cartoons. This is what Mermaid Man and Barnacle Bill were going to look like. I mean, look, isn't that cool? Unfortunately, you can't just hand an executive your show Bible and silently wait for them to finish reading it. You also have to energetically and flawlessly pitch your show. Executives listen to, like, 9 pitches a day. So if you're not selling your show with 110% enthusiasm, they're going to pass right over you. So you have to practice your pitch like your paycheck depends on it. Me and the showrunner I worked with, Ethan Banville, practiced our pitch so many times. We practiced in front of a mirror to our family members. We filmed ourselves practicing and then watched the footage, gave each other notes, and then burned the evidence. We memorized our whole Bible, but despite everything, the first time we pitched, I was still nervous. I had no idea what pitching a show would be like. We brought in our stapled Bible that we typed out on Microsoft Word, and I thought, this isn't enough. This Bible doesn't even have a spine. I still thought we needed to bring in finished scripts and character designs to show the executives how much thought we put into the show. But Ethan reassured me, No, the executives don't want to be overwhelmed with content. But when we got to the lobby, I saw the group ahead of us pitching their show, and they had cardboard cutouts of their characters, and they were handing the executives custom plushies, and I turned to Ethan, we are so underprepared. When we got inside, we pitched the show just like we practiced 1,000 times, and then the executive told me that no studio would ever want to work with a YouTuber.
Yeah, sometimes they don't even wait to tell you in an email that they're going to pass. Sometimes they just get it over with right then and there. So, you know, not the best confidence boost for your first pitch. But we kept on pitching, and we kept hearing a lot of no's. And if you ever pitch, get ready to hear that response. Everyone in Hollywood has a story of being turned down by everyone, and then finding the right home for their idea. And sometimes really talented people work for years on an idea, and it goes nowhere. So the fact that I was even able to make something, and it didn't get canceled, I'm incredibly grateful for. But getting a show greenlit is not the only way to get it made. You can always put in the work and develop something yourself. No, you won't have a network backing you with tons of money, but if you truly believe in your idea, you should at least put something out for the world to see and over time build your own audience and then, who knows, maybe even sell it to a network. But not the one who said they never work with a YouTuber. They're horrible. Okay. That's all the time I got. I gotta get back to watching Oddball streaming October 7th on my Netflix.
Okay, so I'm just going to get right into the meat of this topic. I love reading fables. If you weren't paying attention in 10th grade English, a fable is a short story, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end of them. A good way to remember is that the word fable starts with an F, and so does furry. So, some examples of a fable you might have heard are the tortoise and the hare, Humpty Dumpty, Pacific Rim, and the autobiography of Hillary Clinton. This one's a fable because the main character is a bit. I'm just kidding. Humpty Dumpty's not a fable. So there's this guy named Aesop, and he's best known for creating a bunch of fables. He's written over 655, and seriously, I don't know why for some reason we can't find the exact number. How many fables has he written? Over 655! Oh, so 656? Like, what's the range here? Unfortunately, he has died, so we won't be writing any more fables. So why can't we get the exact number? Like, what the heck, guys? And he also had a very strong no-photo policy, so no pictures of him were ever taken. Because he was born around 500 BC. I don't even think he knew what a camera was, so here we go. This is what he supposedly looked like. And what I like most about fables is that the wording is so, like, Shakespearean and old-timey, and it makes you feel like you're smart for reading these short paragraph-long stories. And even better, they have a moral at the end of them, so once you're done reading, you're like, oh man, that was deep. Like, every single fable can end with one character dropping a microphone. Like, the whole story is just build-up to that one moral moment. Okay, so I'm going to read some of my favorite fables to you guys. I'm not going to read them how Aesop wrote them, though, because he had so many unnecessary smart-sounding words when really all of his fables could be shortened down to, like, 3 sentences. So here we go. Aesop's fables in my own words.
Belling the cat.
So there's these mice that get together, and they're trying to come up with a plan to get this cat to stop killing them. And one mouse is like, oh, we could put a bell around the cat, you know? So now we could hear it or something. And this other mouse is like, yeah, all right, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Who's going to put the bell on? Okay, so this one's kind of actually stupid. I don't really know what the moral is. Like, maybe no one wants to be the person to sacrifice themselves for the good of humanity or my sanity or... Okay, here's my version of the rest of that story. So after the mouse said that, the other mouse goes, oh, geez, other mouse, you're right. I didn't think of that. Well, I guess I say we all grab our toothpicks and kill the cat. You know, at least that ending made sense. A bell? Pfft. How about you poison it? Or, like, move somewhere where there's not a cat in the first place.
The horse and the groom.
So there's this horse and a groom, which is not the wedding kind. It's an actual groomer, who just calls himself a groom. So this groom spends all this time brushing the horse and making it look pretty. And he also takes some of the horse's oats and sells it for extra cash. Okay, stop right there. Aren't oats supposed to be really cheap? Isn't that a thing? Okay, so the horse is getting malnourished and says, you know, you should really stop worrying about brushing me and more about feeding me. Man, that's deep. I think. The moral is, don't steal your horse's oats. Especially if it talks. Like, you will never hear the end of it. The farmer with the goose with the golden eggs. So there's this farmer, and he somehow gets a goose that lays golden eggs. And now you might be thinking, what's with all these gooses that lay golden eggs? Jack and the Beanstalk did it. The Simpleton Brothers did it. Well, did you know that this is the very first time a goose laying golden eggs has ever appeared in writing? I actually don't know if that's true. I made it up. I mean, it might be true. I don't know. It was 500 BC, you guys.
This is a long time ago. And the goose only lays one egg a day. And the farmer gets greedy and wants more eggs. So he thinks, ah, I bet all the eggs are inside the goose. So he chops up the goose, and guess what? There's only more goose parts in there, not eggs. Okay, so the moral, know how basic things work. Especially if you're a farmer and you don't know how geese work. Or at least be close friends with someone who knows this. Hey man, I don't think that's how geese work. I mean, I get how you might think this is a magic goose because everything about this is physically impossible. But we could already live pretty decent lives with just one egg a day. Like, we're already in the top 1% now. How can a goose carry around a golden egg inside of itself? Do you know how heavy gold is? If there's solid gold, can a goose ever have babies? This seems like an evolutionary dead end to me. The bat and the weasels. So there once was this bat, and he fell. Somehow. Aesop never really says how it fell. It's a bat. It can fly. Okay, so the bat gets caught by a weasel. Like, one of these things? Okay, so you're saying that a bat gets caught by a weasel because he fell. Whatever, okay. So the weasel says, I am an enemy to all birds, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, I'm not a bird, I'm a mouse. Oh, what are these things that look like wings? Oh, these, that's my blanket, because I'm cold. Okay, that part wasn't in the story. So the weasel lets him go, but then it happens again with a different weasel, and this weasel says, I am an enemy to mice, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, oh, tiny weasel, but I'm not a mouse. I'm a bird. And then he lets him go. Again. Sometimes Aesop wrote the moral you're supposed to take at the end. He did it with this one, and the moral verbatim is, look and see which way the wind blows before you commit yourself. So are you saying to follow the crowd? Like, go with the flow? That's not really a good moral, Aesop. Also, why didn't the bat just say, I'm a bat, losers, and I can fly? Later, it's also teaching you to make up lies on the spot that contradict your first lie. That's how you get caught lying. Okay, so last fable, the fox and the crow. So this crow has a piece of cheese in her beak, and this fox comes along and is like, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, I just love your feathers. I wish I could just hear you sing. This crow is now very flattered, and she goes to sing, and then the cheese falls out of her mouth, and the fox eats it. And then the last line, this is beautiful, the fox says, you have a voice, madam. I see. What you want is wits. Moral of the story, everyone wants to steal your cheese. Don't let your guard down for a second. That would be a good t-shirt design. Like, it would say, everyone wants to steal your cheese, and then it would have, like, a silhouette of a fox and a crow. Someone make that t-shirt. I'll buy it.
Welcome, everyone, to this brand new YouTube video. What's good? I have Jaden Animations here.
Hi.
So, what we're doing in this drawing collab thing is we are drawing each other's old art. We're giving each other art that we drew as kids, and then the other person has to redraw it in their own style and make it good and whatnot.
Yeah.
On Jaden's channel, we did the exact same thing because we had such a fun time doing it. So, we're doing it again.
And it's really important you watch both videos.
You won't understand this video unless you watch the other video.
Totally.
So, the picture you sent me was this girl pulling the leash of, like, 20 dogs.
Yeah. I just had a bunch of dog stickers, and I was like, I'm going to draw a picture with these. So I drew a picture around the stickers.
And there's some dog saying, you can do it, keep trying, pull harder. And then there's, like, a son who's, like, the son's trying to help, too.
So I don't know how many hints I should give you, but the dogs aren't talking.
What?
Okay, and then you sent me, like, these potato head things.
Yeah, this one I drew when I was a very small child. One of these people is supposed to be someone. I'll tell you who it is after you're done drawing it.
Can I guess?
Sure, guess.
Is it, I don't know, your sister?
You're never going to guess. I don't think you're going to guess in a million years. And it's funny because I know exactly who it is because that's how I would draw that person.
Because it's so accurate. I remember that brand. It was just, like, dogs. And their thing was having dog pictures with the dog's head being really big. They had stuffed animal dogs as Happy Meal toys at McDonald's. And I had a gray one named Fluffy.
Like from Harry Potter?
See, I don't get that reference, and you know that.
The girl's not talking. And it's like, well, who else could it be, Jaden?
I don't know.
Wait, I think I got it. Those are clouds we're pulling.
Yeah. You gave this one a lot of teeth.
That one's supposed to be a thing, too. Do you want me to give you a clue?
Sure.
It's an animal.
Is it a rabbit? Because it's got bunny ears.
No.
It's really creepy.
Those pictures were when I was very little. I want to say it was like before kindergarten.
The other one that's a person. My mind immediately went to celebrities. Is this Britney Spears?
It's a fictional person. See, even if I told you, you haven't seen that many stuff, so you might be like, I've never seen that. And I'll be like, well, there you go.
That's why you couldn't draw it. Otherwise, you would totally know because it's so accurate.
I used to have my own journal, like a journal where I'd write down like how I felt and everything.
Really?
One time my younger sister went through the journal, and so I threw it away because I didn't want anyone else to read it. And now I'm so upset because I'm like, I could have made a video on it.
Yeah. I tried to have a journal. It was because I was inspired by Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Nice.
So it was totally a ripoff of Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
But he didn't invent journals.
So many teeth. This is horrifying. The way his, mouth curls up.
I was very little. I hope this doesn't turn out bad.
That's what I say with everything I do. There's not much to these characters here. And she's got spaghetti hair.
Okay, here's another clue. It's from an anime.
It's Sailor Moon, isn't it?
How'd you get that? How'd you get Sailor Moon with that?
The famous Sailor Moon spaghetti hair. Insert the theme song right now.
Jupiter, Sailor Mercury.
Now that I know that she's Sailor Moon, I can add some details that you left out. I never watched Sailor Moon, so I don't know what she looks like.
Just get a reference.
No, that's cheating. My interpretation of 6-year-old James's interpretation of Sailor Moon. So it's like triple telephone. What's a show that you watched but didn't enjoy?
Sword Art Online. Do you remember that meme that was like a comic of a poorly drawn guy going like, hey, do you see that guy over there? And then it shows someone waving and then it's like, he thinks such and such and then they hate him. Remember that?
Yeah.
The original version of that comic was, hey, you see that guy over there? He thinks Sword Art Online is a good anime.
So wait, is the other guy like a villain in Sailor Moon?
You think he looks like a villain?
Yes. He's brown.
So. I don't know, just saying like, yeah, they're evil, they're brown. That's not
so... Oh, no, I didn't. Would you get a motorcycle?
I'd have to think about it, but then I'd probably be like, nah.
So, no?
It would be a hard no. And you know what I just realized? So I didn't watch the Powerpuff Girls because I thought it was like a girly TV show. Man, I don't know why. I watch Yu-Gi-Oh! And stuff. But then I watch Sailor Moon, though, so...
I'd say it's arguably more girly.
Yeah.
I remember having, a little sign for doors. Girls rule, and then the other side was boys rule.
Fair enough. What about that song? Girls go to Jupiter to get more stupider. I stopped singing because I remembered there was, an inappropriate... A non-advertiser-friendly part. They go to Venus to get a...
Is her headband red or blue?
It's... Do you want me to say? Why did you draw this?
I had stickers.
I had stickers.
You know, the best media of art.
I'm still surprised you got Sailor Moon.
I mean, give yourself some credit here. I can't believe I didn't get it sooner.
There was this other anime that I used to watch as a kid. It was called Ray Earth. One of the girls, she was all red, another one was blue, and another one was green.
Isn't that Powerpuff Girls?
You know, but it's anime Powerpuff Girls.
Is this a kangaroo?
Do you want me to say what it is?
Yes.
It's supposed to be a bat.
Oh, I didn't draw a bat.
There's two dots on all the clouds, two red dots, and I think those are supposed to be eyes. Now they look evil. All right, so here is the redraw.
Look at all those. I like it a lot, actually. That's spot on. And then there's mine.
Sailor Moon.
She had no arms and legs, so she's just sitting there.
But she did have arms and legs, the little noodle legs. No, those two lines are supposed to be the...
Oh, see, I thought that was just, her body.
No.
Don't be silly, Jaden. Next one?
Next one. This one that you drew, there's some, bird monsters waiting for a bus. The bus is a turtle.
The file you sent me is labeled I'm sorry, Jaden.
I think I made a video about that picture. It was a picture that was made in a book. You know those books you make in elementary school?
The answer key is in that video.
Yep.
I remember that the red guys are the good guys, and the yellow, yep, orange, and purple guys are bad.
Whenever you're drawing in front of someone, and they always are like, I can only draw stick figures, and it's like, cool.
We got a comedian over here.
What are these guys waiting for a bus stop for?
I know, right? That's the main flaw in making them a bird. This gun is bigger than this guy's entire body.
Yep.
I don't know how to draw guns, so I'm just going to use your reference image.
I was going to say, neither did I. That picture is funny with the context of everyone in my class was talking about how they would make the world a better place.
Yeah.
You have kids talking about cleaning up the library, reading books to the homeless or whatever. And I'm like, I'd kill people.
You can thank me later.
Okay, there was this one, like, assignment for school. It was the elementary school assignment. You had to, like, write what you wanted for Christmas, but it wasn't supposed to be, like, a materialistic toy thing. It was supposed to be, like, what I want for Christmas is warm smiles with my family and an open fire and blah, blah, blah. I didn't understand it the first time, so I was like, what I want for Christmas is a Power Ranger and I want blah, blah. Then the teacher was like, no, you have to ask for things that you don't normally ask for. And I'm like, oh. And so then the second time, I asked for a clap-on, clap-off thing. Because, you know, I saw a commercial for it, and I'm like,
clap-on, clap-off.
That looks cool. And so then the teacher was like, no, you still don't understand.
I'm just going to fail you now.
Should I get an Instagram?
You've already got an Instagram. What are you talking about?
You're right.
You've got multiple Instagrams. If you could get any pet right now, what would you get?
A rat.
Do you want to go that route?
So I was thinking about making this its own video, but first I wanted the subjects of the video to like me. That sounds weird. You already know what's happening, but I bought rats. Their names are Peach and Daisy, like in Mario. And Peach needs a little more getting used to.
She needs some extra attention.
You bite the peach bites back.
Peach likes to bite people. Daisy's cool, though.
This alligator, I just realized, has, like, 6 legs.
One of them might be a hand. I don't know. Where's tail?
So he has 5 legs.
I can almost be done.
Oh, no.
Like, it depends on how detailed I want the background to be.
You want it really detailed. These guys are, like, burning to a crisp, being grabbed by the sun.
So you drew the sun, like, doing stuff, and I drew the sun doing stuff, and
my son was not burning things. He was helping walk a dog.
I'm making the world a better place, okay? Getting rid of all of those horrible orange, purple, and yellow.
Okay. Yeah, freaking yellow people.
I made an Asian joke in my last video.
Did you get any comments about it?
No, actually. They were commenting that I got this one math equation wrong. That's what everyone was commenting about. Boom.
Are you done?
I could make it better.
Yeah, do that.
One of the nicest comments I think I ever got was someone said that it took them 15 minutes to watch a video because they kept pausing and looking at the pictures. And I was like, oh, everything I do is worth it. I don't want to brag, but I've gotten better at Tetris, okay? I look back at that old video of mine and I'm like, ooh, I could do better.
You could pull it up right now since you're done.
So I got into Tetris because there's this one YouTube channel back in the day called The Irate Gamer, and he made a video about Tetris and being like, oh, Tetris is so fun, it's so addicting. And I was like, really? It's that awesome? So then I just went up and I started playing, and I'm like, it is fun. And then I
never stopped. For anyone wanting to get into Tetris, what's the advice?
You can't get into it. It's you know, only pros like me can play. I was playing Tetris with someone. This is probably, you're probably not going to, like, get the same enjoyment out of this story as I did. But I was playing Tetris and they were like, oh, I see your strategy. You're putting all the pieces to one side so then you can get a Tetris. And I'm like, strategy? That's just how you play the game.
I'm almost done coloring this gun.
Cool.
Which is something I've never said before. I remember finding my old Christmas lists while also looking for these old drawings. For like 3 years in a row, I wished for the world to have world peace.
Did you even know, like, all the war and stuff that was going on when you were a kid?
No, you just, like, say it. It's like, world peace. I don't know what Iraq is.
I just need to get one more line. Right there. Hey.
Hey. I finished drawing your war.
My war? There we go. This is what I drew.
Aw. Look at him. I drew your... It's sloppy, but...
Look at the gun. The gun that shoots three bullets. It's beautiful.
Yes, it's before, but what have we learned?
We learned how long it takes to draw things. Sweet. Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out Jaden's video on her channel. We did the same thing. Cool. Thanks for watching.
And wear your seatbelt.